Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As usual, this time of the day, you have your favorite duo here on Eagle FM with, on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. I almost said, on Home Run, your number one talk radio station.
Catches up.
Yeah, it really, you know, pops up. And yeah, by the way, you know, that's Dwight. At this point, we have all the mics and cameras in the studio. I don't think there's anyone that needs introduction, but, for the sake of all protocol observed, we'll just, you know, keep doing that.
And for the sake of all protocol observed, I recognize, Helmut's presence as well. Oh, hey man, we're just doing the Sokop thing or the Valvas thing of, 8 pages of all protocol observed.
I recognize. Look, I think that's the, you know, I think that's the part about, social, you know, humanities, line of work.
Mm.
You end up, like using words that are just not used in regular conversations. And that's the same thing that you have, I mean, you know, it's the same thing that you have, that we have in, that we have in these reports, including the one that we're going to be using as our main source of reference today. You know, words like candid, who use words like candid in the middle of a conversation, in a casual conversation? I know it's a professional conversation, but I think for me, when it comes to things like this, especially, documents that are made for, to be published for the general public, your target should be the person that, who did not go to, your audience should be, Umkuru Development Community High School graduates.
Because you were that school again.
Look, man, the thing is, this English is targeting St. Paul graduates.
But, and you forgot where they went to.
Exactly. You leave out a very large chunk of audience that are also just as interested in the information that you're disseminating. So. I mean, look, it's a good thing. It's a fancy English. It's nice. But, if the goal is to communicate to as large, to as much larger audience as possible, then you want to simplify it. Just simplify it as much as possible.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to know what the community college or the combined or the project school is in. In an Ugandan sense or in a South African sense. Or in a Cameroonian sense, but we obviously find ourselves in a discussion where we are looking at a report that, I mean, let's sketch the image for our listeners first, even though, you know, it is already on our socials where you can basically get an explainer about the image.
Yeah.
So the image is a whole bunch of presiding officers and speakers of legislative entities across the Commonwealth of the African chapter. Let's say that again, the Commonwealth African chapter met in South Africa, in Johannesburg. And no, it wasn't a Pan-African Parliament thing.
Yeah, this is just the...
this is the Commonwealth.
Yeah, this is just the Commonwealth and the only African.
Yeah, only the Africans. Yeah,
the African members of the Commonwealth countries. And now you have, now this, and this is not the entire Commonwealth, it's not the presidents, it's just the speakers. You can imagine, I'm assuming it's the speakers of their respective national assemblies. And you have presiding officers. Now, so Commonwealth, speakers, and presiding officers on the African continent. Mm. They met in Joburg. Yeah, to talk about a lot of things like how to involve young people in legislative matters and how to employ technology. I can't believe AI popped up again, in regulation and implementation.
I was afraid and I stopped at a certain page and I was like, what are these people talking about?
I know, right? And
I actually stopped at the. I actually stopped. I think it was like after Lesotho and the Namibia case, these first pages.
Yeah.
After South Africa tried the reputation management in page 1 and page 2.
Hey, they had to, you know.
They did the same thing, Helmut, that they did last year. They did the same thing that they did last year. Last year,
yeah.
It was because of the attacks that Trump and the American government were making on South Africa because of the supposed white genocide claim.
Yeah.
Ne? That Elon Musk was then also amplifying on social media.
No, I mean, Elon Musk does that all the time.
Yeah, he does it a lot. So, and this is just one of the questions, for example, whereby, what do they call that? Some of the other political commentators, and I'm saying commentators, not like active. Okay, activists maybe as well, but the activists get involved because they see how very powerful people like Elon Musk, them, Peter Thiel, who's the other guy? The other billionaire, Bezos, even, how they get involved in actual policies that impact everyday people. Now, what is an actual policy that impacted everyday people? For example, these data centers popping up in the world.
Yeah.
Australia is also apparently like, you remember the water and electricity discussion that we had about the
use of, like the, basically the overconsumption.
Yeah, that UN
let's just say the demand of the water and energy demand associated with the, with data centers, especially AI data centers.
Yeah. That UN university report.
Yeah.
So Australia is also one of those countries that are just willingly giving subsidies to companies building these data centers. But here's the actual concern, Helmut. Australia is facing a major housing market crisis. Why? That conversation that we had with Mr. Ivor Ishikovitz in last month about the perspectives of African youth. Now take that report. And there's a reason why I'm going to use the other report that we spoke about in June, the Global Justice Report.
Yeah.
Why I'm going to cite that report into today's discussion as well, or I'm introducing that into today's discussion as well, is because I can clearly see a disconnect, Helmut, in terms of lawmakers. And if, okay, what's another term if I say as a sort of like as a collective of legislative entities. Let's say the high-ranking officials of legislative units like parliaments and national councils, in our case, they go to a pan-African platform, because this is a pan-African platform, but and this is also now a third tier of this problematic engagement. It's a Commonwealth engagement. It's a British engagement. It's a honoring colonialism template engagement. And I mean, I don't know how many times I can stress this, but it just, by now, it just feels disgusting, Helmut, dressing things up in the Commonwealth, because the Commonwealth is technically there to honor, it's an unofficial collection of UN member countries, but that honor the British, basically British influence.
You know, my only problem with the Commonwealth starts with the name. For one, the wealth is not that common.
Yeah.
Like, we can't say, you know, we're a member of the Commonwealth, blah, 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 and talk about, the Malawi, you know, I think that was the speaker from Malawi, who spoke about, something I found interesting about the youth, that, writing laws that are youth-centered is not enough. Of course, he's talking from a Malawian perspective here, but of course, the concerns that the youth in Malawi are facing can be observed in a lot of African countries, especially a large part of it.
Yeah.
And that's the high cost of living. That's what the gentleman pointed out.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's the high cost.
Citing things like that.
Yeah. You can make laws that prioritize the youth, but are you implementing them in the way that they are changing the status quo of the youth, especially ones associated with the high cost of living.
Yeah. Let's for example say, let's get into actual lawmaking.
Yeah.
But countries who are participating in the conversation on lawmaking, and when you go look at them, who they are, you realize that they are problematic in their own lawmaking. For example, who am I citing? Firstly, who's technically, who was number one to stand up after Cameroon to say something? Uganda. And this is the interesting thing, Almut, and this is where you potentially sit with a scenario there of, okay, let's, the contributions, if you didn't, let's say you crawled out of a rock today, you were a born person today, someone installed a software update in your brain right now, today, you became alive and you became aware of your surroundings. And your software update also included, let's look at, trying to understand governance. You would have thought the person from Uganda, even though this contribution, I suspect, was a slightly panel-beated and doctored and, you know.
Somehow.
And there was a handy-andy cloth, you know, swiped through it, you know, to sanitize it a little bit heavy. You would think that this contribution is wonderful on the face of it. Yes. And I can quickly read you this contribution given by this one lawmaker representing Uganda. Just want to get the thematic. Where's Uganda? That is Cameroon. No, that's Botswana. Is it Mr. Obot. Mr. Jacob Markson Obot. So this is still under the discussion of the conference theme, reforming parliamentary systems to tackle complex governance issues in Africa. So the Obot contribution explains, the Speaker of the Parliament of Uganda, who seconded the motion brought forward by the role of parliaments in enhancing public trust. That is the second point. Obot explained and acknowledged the decline in public trust across many African parliaments due to challenges such as perceptions of corruption, weak oversight, limited citizen engagement, and political polarization. Uganda.
That last one.
No, the whole sentence is Uganda. The whole sentence is Uganda. Let me say it again, Helmut.
Political polarization.
Weak oversight and governance. What did they want to do? Remember, even Uganda. Still on Uganda. Earlier this morning, I watched the sketch. There's this other stand-up comedian from the U.S. Sorry, Helmut, you're not the only stand-up comedian, you know, that is in close proximity to me to influence me.
I know.
There's this other American guy known as Shuler King, S-H-U-L-E-R, and then King. And he commented on a month back about Museveni's son, the chief of the army.
Yeah.
Who apparently told on some sort of a social media platform, he told Jay-Z, please, can I have Beyonce as my wife? And this guy is going like this, a general just there decides, you, Jay-Z, Sean Jay-Z Carter, must give your wife away, just like that. His face was just like your face, literally. Literally. This is what,
hang on a second.
The president of your country gets
a whole army general
says things like this
on social media.
Yeah.
Out loud for everyone to.
Yeah.
At this point, that's just being drunk on power.
Yes. And it was exactly the same guy. The reason why I'm citing that example is the exact same guy. Remember what you and I joked about earlier this part of this year?
Yeah.
He was the guy that said civilians must be tried in military court. And then legislative entity of Uganda was quiet. Remember, the parliament was quiet.
Yeah.
But there was some sort of a legal challenge that came through from a CSO or a civil society organization to stop this use of military of the army to basically trample on civilian rights. There was something that happened in that regard. And the Speaker of the Ugandan Parliament says, there is a decline in the public's trust in parliaments in Africa. He says African parliaments. He uses a broad term, African parliaments. Corruption. You've had a president for the past 40 years.
And you are talking about corruption.
You are citing weak perception, declining perceptions and trust, weak oversight, limited citizen engagement. You're the one with the president for 40 years. And political polarization. You're the one locking up Bobby Wiener for... If the guy just starts making a song even, he just barely wrote a lyric and then you're locking him up.
And one thing I find interesting about the Ugandan military, head of the military, General Muhoozi, but I think somewhere mid last month, it surfaced. It was just all over. I first saw it on social media, and then I found an article. Business Insider Africa wrote a whole article on it, and it was titled "One of Africa's Most Outlandish Military Leaders Intend to Succeed His Father in in Uganda's Highest Seat," aka. It's basically a monarchy at this point. I think this is one thing that is very interesting about the African Union. There are a lot of elephants, especially when it comes to the practice of democracy. There are a lot of elephants in the room.
You're using elephant.
No, it's not one.
It sound like a herd.
No, it's a whole head that we are not addressing.
Yeah.
And things like this is one of them.
Just to let you guys know, elephants are actually not, bad animals. We're just using it as a metaphor.
It's just an expression. Yeah. Look,
we don't hate elephants, please, guys.
Yeah, which is why it, it becomes a very interesting conversation to have when we start talking about the state of leadership on the African continent.
Yeah.
It's not a very easy one to have because you have, we're talking about democracy and all kinds of leadership structure. And we are not actually just having a conversation of what type of leadership would you like to adopt in your country, because you can't keep saying, we have democracy in our country, and then you have someone that's been in power for the past 100 years.
Mm.
That's a monarchy.
And then just transferring it to his closest son.
And the scary thing is, this is not, if you look at the family ties and association to power, this is not just Uganda. This is pretty much the entire African continent. And, actually, this is not the entire African continent. If you look at the, the decline in democracy that is being observed globally, especially in Western countries and Western influenced countries in terms of governance, one thing that you keep seeing is that much of public office is being dominated by those either through friendship or family relations in close proximity to power, and that in itself is just terrible. But then these are the very same people that are telling you that we are running on merit. No, we're not.
We have installed a culture of meritocracy.
We don't have meritocracy.
No, you haven't.
We really don't. You must. This is where the sarcastic notion of knowing a guy who knows a guy, sadly, is observed as a reality.
Mm.
Now, picture the African Union every time that they meet and talk about everything that that relates to African, African world future, which we can talk about development, but development is, development is the house, the foundation is the leadership. You can't talk about development without first talking about the leadership, because I like the term that's used in this report is sustainable development. Not only do you want to build something, you want to build something that will last. Now, if you are planning on building something that will last, you want to make sure that you lay it on the leadership foundation that will sustain it, hence the sustainable development. But the problem is, you have a lot of African leadership that has uncle, niece, and a nephew, and parents and grandparents just running the entire country.
Mm.
And look, if it was based on merit, it wouldn't be much of a big deal, but let's not kid ourselves and just naively sit and think that, everything is run on merit. No, absolutely not. There is a lot of, what's the opposite of merit? Let's go with knowing a guy who knows a guy going
on. Kangaroo.
Yeah, so, on governance now. This is why this I think it was a human rights presentation that was done in the United Nations. There's one gentleman that came from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
That just yelled at pretty much the British and the entire Western, you know, the entire Western world. And okay, now you know, the funny thing is when we look at what you guys do, we don't criticize you anyway. But you know. You are violating international law left, right, and center. And on one side, you are sitting us down to lecture us on human rights. You don't see a problem with that.
Mm.
Now, it's the hypocrisy is one that is very hilarious. But for Africa now, this is where, you know, this is where I feel like we are doing much of these things for money. There are a lot of things that we, you know, we can't say out loud because, well, you don't want to scare investors.
No. We've got to stop that indication, Helmut, of wanting to scare any investor. I mean,
And look, the thing, we have that mentality, which is a very terrible one.
No. I would want to know who has that mentality, because here's the thing, there.
Yeah.
If you don't even need to switch on a TV, you don't even need to own a TV today. You just need the smartphone, and you go on and you Google search something. And then you'll find the negatives of the world. For example, Helmut, there's a whole bunch of funny things there that are happening in Germany. When I say funny things, I mean like super funny things, like cyber attacks, drone crashes and attacks, funny things.
Close in Germany?
To, yeah, close to major. I'm just using Germany as an example.
Yeah.
Because the rest of the world is not reporting on some of these things. Yeah. It's just the German news platforms that are reporting it.
Yeah.
But if you think that's just Germany, then we are wrong, because we don't know what's potentially happening in the UK and definitely in places like Canada and Australia and the United States.
Yeah.
What am I talking about? For example, so you know, Google likes throwing out these notifications on my Android about, you know, news things. And it just happens so I enable these notifications from international news stuff, so that if I need something to read, you know, my eyes can fall on an article here and there. So I read about this Augsburg train explosion, or explosion on a train station in the city of Augsburg, which is in southern Germany. If you Google search it and you work through the international news service Deutsche Welle, they'll just tell you two people were injured on a train station in Augsburg. So you don't know, did the train get hurt? Was it more than one person? Was it something malicious? What was it? Other news sites in Germany will tell you it's actually a hand grenade that exploded while two Ukrainians were handling it, a man and a woman. Now, why were two Ukrainians handling a hand grenade on a train station?
In Germany.
Next scenario. Apparently.
Okay, that's scary.
Very scary.
Yeah.
Apparently, just last week, a train, an intercity, they call it an intercity train exchange, ICE. Not the other ICE from the United States, the immigration guys. The immigration and customs agents. Germany has something known as ICE, which is the intra-city exchange, which is high-speed trains between cities.
Yeah.
A train door opens up while in transit.
That's not good.
Now, when the train door opens, the operator has to pull the handbrake to immediately stop the train.
Yeah.
Stop the train. The German security services are investigating this. A drone...
The doors are automated.
Well, it can only be operated by the person that driving the train. Now, if you...
But if the door
opens while you're busy riding the train or driving the train as the operator, you need to immediately stop the train and investigate, because it might be something faulty. Then there was a drone strike. Okay, not actually a drone strike, but it was a crack. It was a suspicious drone that was investigated at the Leipzig airport in eastern Germany. Then it was a suspicious bag of explosives found near a power station. Now, I'm citing all these weird things, so that the discussion around understanding the connectedness of the world and the information sets that we are now exposed to is no longer from the early 2000s, where half the people, where everybody was easily, you know, we were easily convinced in the 2000s about how bad Osama bin Laden was, how bad what was the guy's name from Iraq?
Is it Saddam? Yeah.
How bad Saddam was. And in hindsight, you now get to understand, if you know the backstory, Saddam was put there by the Americans. Saddam wasn't put there by himself.
For both of them, you can ask yourself one question. Who trained them?
Yeah. Who was involved in
the... They didn't just pop out of nowhere and then boom. It doesn't start with Genesis with, in the beginning, poof, there was Osama. No, he was trained.
Mm.
For a specific purpose, and then maybe he may or may not have, you know, gone rogue.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the story of every terrorist that you you can mention. Someone, mostly the people that they are fighting, trained them.
Yeah.
That's the irony about terrorism, actually, when you look at it.
Yeah, it is. The whole discussion of terrorism, is a peculiar one. The reason why I say it's a peculiar one, because from the earlier discussion that we've obviously seen in the African continent, is that the youth are seen as a future political obstacle, or they are dressed up as a national security threat, which we've also dissected already here on the Home Run. That's obviously the youth, the unemployed youth. But I I'm continuously going to cite the discussions that we had here specifically prior to today's discussion, because these are lawmakers, guys, that met in Johannesburg, South Africa in June. These lawmakers, they all gave contributions from across the African continent under the Commonwealth banner. But,
I was really enjoying this report until you emphasized that Commonwealth. But
you know that I don't like the discussion of Commonwealth.
Now I can't stop but thinking about the bus at Queen Elizabeth's funeral.
Exactly.
That was a Commonwealth bus.
That's and how we were made to feel, because why is it just that our presidents were told, "Hanredi bus awens," and then you see all the other presidents showing up here in cars and stuff. We should have... I don't even know if Xi Jinping wasn't there at her death, right?
We should have been like
Xi Jinping. Our African president should have done like Xi Jinping have done. You don't show up. You just send a letter. Maras omdat somebody wanted to go there and chow SNT.
Did they show up, I mean, that was the... come to think of it, that's the most embarrassing thing to ever happen in the history of African leadership.
Yeah.
Not only did they show up, but they also, were smiling in suits on a bus.
They said yes to riding a bus.
And then they show up here and they have a convoy. Dude, you just got off a bus. You hop on Silas Lepuka and you do just fine. You have enough experience. Extra customer Silas Lepuka before I send them an invoice.
But yeah, you are right. It didn't look so nice.
No, it didn't.
Our president wasn't there, eh?
Oh. No, he was there.
He didn't go, eh?
No, I think he was there. Yeah. The one that I remember, properly, because I laughed at it really, really, really hard, was Cyril Ramaphosa.
What was he doing?
He smiled with that cupcake smile. On a bus, a whole president.
Why do you cry? It's a cupcake smile. Why do you call it a cupcake smile?
Look, that's what his citizens call him. There's this one very brave girl. There's this one very brave kid, just a little girl, that called her called him that to his face. I think it was about 2 or 3 months ago.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, everyone just bursted into a laughter.
What did she say?
She called him cupcakes. I'm like, these kids of nowadays don't have respect.
They don't have respect. Yeah, it's like the other, it's like the other story that I saw a video of that same stand-up comedian, that American, a teacher in the US. Now he was home. The guy was taken to. He was arrested by the police.
Yeah,
and charged for assault because the teenager in the class told the teacher, "Yo, what's up, bruh?" And then the teacher told him, "Listen, I'm not your bruh. I am sir to you." And then the teenager goes, "Okay, sorry, little bro." Yeah.
Hey, Menir was like, "Hey,
not today, not today." So the teacher was facing like some sort of assault charges in that specific state of Arkansas, ne?
Mm.
And then the comedian goes like, "You know, there's nothing you can do because the kids come like that, factory produced from the house. The factory settings are straightforward like that from the house." And then when they show up at school, and unfortunately that's the kind of attitude you get. So I think that little girl was like, I don't think she was brave. She was just acting it out because, you know, she thought that her president looked like a cupcake. Like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. How much you're making me famous if I know this? No, man.
Well, Africa is a movie.
Yes, it is.
Now I have something that I found also interesting from the speaker of Malawi. Samia Suleiman. Suleiman, speaker of the Parliament of Malawi. Now he was seconding what the speaker of Kenya pointed out about the youth.
Mm.
Now Suleiman stated that youth are not just the future; they are actively shaping the present. Nothing new there. And he warned that the demographic reality of African youth population represents either a massive demographic dividend or a source of instability.
Mm.
Now, if you have to take one case serious, you really have to take that one serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are young people full of energy. It's either you have to create avenues for them to be productive in, or they will just be sitting there and they will find a lot of very questionable activities to do with their very free time and very energetic bodies.
Mm.
Now, and then he gave the Malawi case study, and he pointed out that And he noted that while Malawi's national vision, Malawi 2063, I did not know that until today.
so they adopted the AU agenda.
Uh-huh.
And just, they just copy and paste it. It's also ours.
Yeah, vision 2030. Out of here.
We're not here for UN SDGs. Yeah. It's also like our description for today's poster. It had that SDG label. I said, no.
Relax.
Please.
This is not SDG.
This is not an SDG talk. This is Commonwealth. This is not UN.
Commonwealth, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the speaker also, the speaker then proceeded to say that while Malawi's national vision is youth-centric, policies alone do not change lives.
Yeah.
Now, citing, he cited Afrobarometer survey and highlighted that young Malawians' top concerns are the rising cost of living and the block, and the lack of credible pathway to income and dignity.
Yeah.
This is not just Malawi. High cost of living and the lack of pathway, I just got out of school. I was told, go to school 5 days a week and, you know, from morning, afternoon study, evening studies, do it all.
Mm.
And then when you graduate, there will be opportunities waiting for you. And these kids did everything right, which is why they went through for, they went through from kindergarten all the way to tertiary.
Yeah.
And then they graduate and then find out that the job market is not big enough to absorb all of them. And they find out that they're actually sitting, you know, 2, 3, 5 years without a job with the qualifications. They were told that if they had them, they would have a job waiting for them.
Yes. And remember the report that we looked at, that Africa Youth Survey report?
Yeah.
On page 44, no, on chapter 44, page 44, they've got that lovely thing about democracy and governance. And then also about the aspects of safety, security, and extremism that you already cited.
Yeah.
And at the start, they've start off, the report obviously starts off with Afro-optimism. You know, how optimistic are we at being African? Now, there's a lovely thing here that is cited in this report, the diaspora, the people living outside of the continent, 45 million. When we did the labor, remember when I was in Zambia and you did the African migrant labor?
Yeah.
That dimension.
Migrant labor report.
And when we obviously spoke to that friend of mine, who is living outside of the country, you see what is the major motivating force.
Yeah.
From the guys doing it illegally from North Africa to get into Southern Europe.
Yeah.
And from the Africans who are doing it legally, meaning buying a ticket, applying for a job.
All the necessary documents.
Getting the passport, work visa, passports,
and everything.
Getting interviewed, then being told, yes, we'll sponsor your visa and your flight ticket. Just make sure you have your stuff in order, your sign. All of those people. And Africans, and this is the nice thing, Helmut, that you can love about Africans. And yes, I use the word love very sparingly on the show. But this is what you can respect and love about Africans. Yeah. We are industrious. We wish to earn a living. You know, we equate a stable living with, literally we follow like religious texts that say, idle hands make for the devil's playground.
Yeah.
We believe in be productive in order to have a productive lifestyle that you can then sustain and maintain.
Yeah.
Meaning have a job that pays for your lifestyle. I spoke the other day because I went to the language and culture organization by the German government, the Goethe Institute.
Yeah.
So I went there to go and look up for German language courses and what they charge. And I met a guy there who's a Namibian. He's a guy that married a Namibian, so he's now a naturalized Namibian. And then he explained to me, because he's also a media practitioner in his other time, his other life. And I asked him, listen, so what's happening in Germany? I mean, why do I keep hearing that your labor base, the need, meaning the jobs that they have now in the German economy. Remember, I kept mentioning last year it was like at 300,000 to 3 million. No? Yeah, 300,000. That's how many jobs the German economy has open. How many vacancies? It expanded into this year, Helmut, to 1.2 million. So I asked him, what's going on? Why is the job market becoming so big? Why are the vacancies becoming so many? Him and the guy standing next to him that I don't know, that I just met there, they both described, well, Germany has a basic income grant. People that are skilled, Helmut, people that have master's degrees, honors degrees, Gutersche, who have certifications, you know, into the next century.
In the next life.
All these people do, they get that certification, they marry, they resign from their jobs, go apply for that unemployment grant.
It's a grant.
Yeah. Remember when you play with words, you can change the political meaning or the political image.
Political correctness comes in again. Yeah.
So we call it what it is, a grant. Then they go apply for that grant, and the guy that helped me with this information, he said, and a buddy of his is apparently living like a king. A German. The guy is a German.
Mm-hmm.
Not a Namibian that moved there. A German living there.
Yeah.
And apparently, it's Germany's version of what is happening in China that we're not hearing much of, the lying flat movement. In China...
What movement now?
A lying flat.
Huh.
The Gen Zs in China are asking the question of, why must I work so hard if I realize that automation is going to kick in, AI is going to kick in, all these other particular things are going to kick in. The people in front of me are not going to resign today because they would also like to make their stake claim in the world economically. And then they just go and lie flat. You know, it's just, it's like what we used to do at home. After we finished high school, we thought we were free. And then you sleep a little bit longer in the morning, not realizing that your mom still has the power to wake you up with her sandal.
Yeah, sandal makers didn't see that
multi-purpose
use.
In my case, it was usually the sandal could travel around the corner. You know, you see yourself dodging the sandal. No, that sandal has an aerodynamic application to it. It literally has this boomerang effect. Ne? Guess what's the boomerang element? Your mom telling you, bring it back. You're going to get extras. So, yeah.
Africa is known for beginners.
No, it's not. So, the discussion takes another layer. Look, Hamoud, I should stop saying look, because we're not in a debate. These MPs and these presiding officers and these speakers of parliaments, they want to look like they're participating in a trendy conversation. I'm not participating in the trendy conversation because I already have my job. But it doesn't mean I am secure. I still have to, you know, work to a position. These particular guys are having this conversation because they represent national policies from ruling parties. So a ruling party sets the agenda.
Mm.
The speaker comes from a ruling party, like in our case, like in a Cameroonian case, like in a South African case, like an Ugandan case. So this is technically a ruling party caucus under the Commonwealth banner about how do you address certain issues. But then there's something that we highlighted from this Africa Youth Survey report, right? That the growing discontent that was surveyed in this Africa Youth Survey. The growing discontent. So now, and it's one of the reasons, and I'll motivate this also to our listeners and the viewers. It's one of the reasons why I asked that question to Mr. Ishikovitz. Is this the generational divide manifesting in an African context? Funny enough, Helmut, it has been there.
Now that's actually thank you for for laying the foundation of my next point. This event was held under the banner of Commonwealth.
Yeah.
And they came together, these speakers for,
I think Namibia must get out of this Commonwealth nonsense.
The whole Commonwealth thing.
Because a lot of Namibians have an issue with SACU, but SACU has got a lot more benefit for us. Commonwealth hasn't got no benefit for us.
So, Commonwealth at this point is more ceremonial.
Yeah, but Hamoud, how do you say yes under a yoke of colonialism? The biggest actor, the world's biggest colonizer is the UK.
Was.
And still is, because we are still participating in upholding this institution known as the Commonwealth.
So we just woke up and decided, you know what? Actually, when you look at it, I think that's our equivalent of the France and former French colonies type of relationship. Except,
it's just with us.
It has less economic implications, really.
It's just within our case, in the African context, it looks like a practical joke.
Yeah, right.
Because we even play sports under the same banner, the Commonwealth Games. But guess where the Commonwealth Games are constantly hosted. They rotate between the UK, Canada, and Australasia. You didn't hear of a Commonwealth Games in South Africa, but South Africa has hosted World Cups.
Now, my next point.
Yeah.
Did we really need to, okay, everything that was discussed in this, everything that was discussed, which is now contained in this report, which is, involving the youth in everything governance, because, well,
it's more different themes. So you've got sustainable development was 4.3. The other one was, what's that one that I cited from? The role of parliaments. In public trust and government?
Yeah, that's the first one.
Yeah, no, that's number two. And the first one was reforming parliamentary systems.
Yeah.
So it was the overall thematic thing, but they had these separate themes, basically.
Yeah. Now, those separate themes, I know that, the youth of technology, the use of technology in everything governance, and the involvement of the use of the youth in everything governance, and the reforming the governance system.
Yeah.
Did we really have to, I think these are, at least on an African level, if we are talking about this on a, if this is something that we are talking about on a quote unquote Commonwealth level, aren't these the things that we should be talking about on an African Union level?
Yes. Hence the reason why I'm citing this particular problematic scenario.
So it's more like a repetition of what's already being discussed at the African Union level.
Yeah. So let's
we just showed up there for food, didn't we?
I think so too. And I concur with your conclusion on that. If you look at things, for example, in terms of the countries that participated. So I know as a Namibian, we Namibians, and I know some of the other Africans, we like being a little bit controversial in terms of in our interactions with each other. Because we are, in many cases, as Africans. We sometimes like slightly, applying, what's that thing, microaggressions with each other. We throw a jab here, a jab there. It's just our political leaders love acting like brothers and sisters, but the ordinary people, if you go look at it like on online forums and stuff.
Yeah.
They are throwing bricks at each other for no reason.
I don't think we are any different from our leaders. I think our leaders are too diplomatic, so they only say it behind closed doors.
They love chilling with each other.
Yeah, but it's us, just, on the other hand, we just put it on social media.
We are just there going like, we say wah, and then the other side says wah, and then you just see a chair flying, and then the other one replies with a table flying back. I'm now citing what happened in my class on high school.
yeah, that happened once in the Ugandan parliament.
No, but in my context, literally, it was the two naughtiest classes. The boys from the two naughtiest classes in grade 10 were taken and put together. Luckily, I wasn't there. I was sitting with all the ladies in the hall in the exam period. And then the teacher, they drove up the stress levels of the supervising teacher. She locked them in the classroom, stormed up to the personnel office to go chill there. And then the boys decided, these two sets of boys decided, let's have fun. And their idea of fun was, my class, the other guys in my class stood one side of the class, and the other guys from their class stood on the other side. And then they started playing this game of who says wah. So if you say wah, then the action can be anything. But usually it's like a premeditated action of, okay, I will throw this chair if you say wah. And then they say wah. Let's see the chair fly. And then those guys said the same thing. Yeah. Now, I only heard about the aftermath afterwards because the whole class, those two whole classes got detention.
Mm.
While I was sitting in the, what was that hall? The gym hall. We were sitting because our same two classes, both girls and a collection of like the Goody Two Shoes boys, which included me, we were sitting in the gym hall together.
Yeah.
And it was literally the middle of the year, this exam, before the end of your grade 10 exam.
Yeah.
The knockout cup final situation.
October.
Yeah, which is in October, October, November. So we were sitting for this middle of the year exam, and these guys did the stupid thing. A whole class got, the whole two classes, those guys that were there, got detention. Yeah, this is Windhoek. I also met detention for the first time in Windhoek. Coming from Rehoboth, everything was administered by by the whip.
Everything was
the branch. Somebody's leather whip.
And everything was administered by
the proverbial plucks, as it was called as well. So, yeah, when I came to Windhoek, I discovered things of detention. I was like, what is detention?
And you're like, this is punishment for you guys?
What is this nonsense? So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I feel like this whole, you know, meeting of, you know, of speakers and presiding officers is, you know, is very redundant with what is already being discussed on African Union level.
Mm.
And I know most of these events are sponsored by more often, well, countries that are, you know, that want the, or like the idea, in this case, the Commonwealth idea to, you know, to continue.
Yeah.
Now, this whole Commonwealth discussion, is, you know, Commonwealth thing is something that I actually have to dig much in and find out if there are any, you know, if there are any trade relations associated with it that is making us hold on to it for dear life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because politically, it doesn't make sense. Trade-wise, maybe everything that has, you know, everything that involves trade makes sense to me because there's money that's being made out of it. You know, there's a market available out of it. One of the running jokes, especially in American history right now is a lot of people are making fun of farmers. That for those of you farmers that voted for Trump, who then turned around to disband organizations like USAID, here's one thing that you guys ruined that you're benefiting from.
Yeah.
Via organizations like USAID, your products were, you had a global market through that organization.
Yep.
And
they generated a lot of positive goodwill.
Yeah,
goodwill is positive. Yeah, they generate a lot of goodwill.
Your market. Yeah, I mean, the world, through that organization, the world was your market. All you just had to do is produce the product, and then they buy it from you and ship it the world over to those in need.
Yeah.
And then you voted for the guy that turned around and ruined that. So, how are things so far at, at farming? And there's a lot of, back and forth, with regards to the current, U.S. administration in terms of how it is that's benefiting farmers. It turns out, a lot of them, are very pro, Trump is a Democrat or Republican?
Republican.
Yeah. Please,
guys, remember that the word Republican in the U.S. is a completely different
thing. It's basically a political party, not a republic as in, not in a literal sense of the word.
Not in our case, because we are Republicans.
Yeah.
We are all technically Republicans in the actual meaning.
In a literal sense of the word republic, we are a republic.
Yeah.
But not the
US the American
republic
alternative.
Now that they have their own. You know, in the very same way that they have inches and pound. I don't know who's pounding who, but.
And yard.
Yeah.
And feet. And
now,
foot.
Coming back to the leadership part of things.
Yeah.
I was watching a presentation of, I think that was from the Youth Parliament here in Namibia.
Mm.
Just a little boy, you know, just giving one heck of a speech. I'm like, I mean, that's an interesting one. Look.
Your assessment, Albert, please let me hear your assessment. Please.
Governance is more than giving a speech. If we are going to get young people involved in governance, let them tag along with standing committees.
I have a reservation on that, Albert.
Because sitting here and just saying, you know what, I would like to, look.
What was the junior?
They were just talking about, the part that I caught was about young people, mental health, and the initiatives that I think, you know, they seek to implement to sort of like, as a countermeasure. Yeah. And I like it. Look, you can come up with ideas and then you can, the thing is you can come up with ideas. Okay, this is the problem that we have in this case, young people, mental health.
Mm.
And this are proposed solutions.
Mm.
The reason why I don't enjoy speeches these days is because I always ask myself one question.
Mm.
That's a very nice speech. These are very good proposed initiatives.
Mm.
Who's paying? Because I know whether we are talking about whether we're having that conversation on a Namibian level, on a SADC level, or in an African Union level, it has always been the exact same thing. We we write speeches, we come up with very good initiatives, but the question of who's paying is this is where you have a lot of monotonous financial assistance.
Yeah.
African Union level, GIZ, SADC level, GIZ, Namibian level, GIZ. So we're only coming up with plans.
Yeah.
And then call Germany. What's up, bro? About that, I know we started off on the wrong foot, but we came up with these plans. Very excellent, and we're very good at coming up with plans. I'll give us that, but the part we have to figure out is who is paying. Once we sort that out, and I personally think tagging along with parliamentary standing committee is one, you are on the ground. If anything, I think they must work more in close proximity with constituency councillors.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Then I agree.
You know, because you are on the ground with directly with the people in need.
Yeah. The reason why I had a slap, why I couldn't understand why you suggested the standing committee discussion.
Yeah. The logistics.
Not just the logistics, man. Because, for example, let's say middle of the week engagements with let's, for example, say like in the stakeholders from the private sector or from public sector, like with the one of the health training facilities.
Yeah.
An observation from that scenario was, for example, how the standing committee already walked in with a preconceived idea that any health training facility that is not a recognized one in their
perspective. Doesn't registered.
No, recognized. Let me say recognized.
Yeah.
Because you can be registered at BIPA, Hamud. Yeah. Your business can, that's a registration.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I had the issue in terms of how the questions were asked, because the parliamentarians were constantly being given the explanation of, yeah, but NTA, NQA, who's the other one? And Health Professions Council.
Is it HPCN?
HPCNA. They gave those guys these health training facilities, these new, the up and coming privately owned ones.
Yeah.
They gave them a set of requirements to meet. Now, if you're given a set of requirements to meet, the Minister of Health, who is basically the boss of the Health Professions Council, and the Health Professions Council in tandem with NTA and NQA are fine with whatever what the requirements are that they're giving you, then who is an MP to come and question that particular practice? I asked that question. Sorry, I asked that question because the facility is getting, the business, the requirements that they are interacting with, these are legal industry requirements.
Yeah.
And then you get the skewed picture of the micro-lending. The skewed picture of the micro-lending was that you could immediately see they were speaking on behalf of government employees.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
You could immediately see they were talking on behalf of government employees.
Yeah.
But then that means they're not speaking on behalf of me, a private sector person, or you, or someone who is a subsistence farmer, or someone that is who runs their own business and they need some cash flow, but because they're in the informal sector, they're in the informal industries, they need to access a micro lender because they can't access a bank, and a bank says, please give me bank statements and proof of income, and are you registered with BIPA, and are you registered with Bob and Company? No. So even then, those MPs didn't even have their hypothesis from the start was even flawed.
I think one of the I get your point, but there's one thing that I think where they basically answered the question of why they heavily emphasized on government employees.
Yeah,
yeah, it's because of how easy it is for them to be given financial assistance by micro lenders, because it's, you know, when they see that someone is a government employee, they know that the, you know, it's a guarantee.
Salary is guaranteed.
Yeah, it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
For an extended period of time until they reach retirement, if they don't do something that ends up, you know, with them being booted out. But I get the picture of the sort of like one-sided representation, because, micro lenders, they don't only have like government employees as their clients, they have all Namibians as their clients. And look, the micro lending part, and I'm working, look, I'm waiting for a report, I think, you know, for a report that's coming out of that, but that one is not, was not on micro lending.
Because we just had that discussion on the audios, right?
I watched, you know, just after we have had that conversation.
Yeah.
I watched a video on the parliament, on the Instagram page of, you know, of a parliament where they had, you know, the military service members, because they were putting on the, you know, the military attires in this engagement, and where they were talking about, one gentleman was basically also in his military uniform, was explaining, how the law, you know, lawmakers should look into implementing laws that will actually shield civil servants or government employees from, call it being, you know, finding themselves like in tight financial corners, in, especially with regards to their relationship with financial institutions, which include, you know, especially your, you know, your micro lenders would be one of those examples. But what that kept bringing me back to was what was pointed out in the engagement that involved the Minister of Finance and Namfisa.
Yeah.
And this is just my point of view. Here's the thing. You can only you can only use a regulation as a solution so far. You are going to get to the point where you are now, traversing, you are going to be forced, if you go any further, you are going to find yourself traversing the line between, regulation and invasion of privacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I feel like, right now, our lawmakers, especially in relations to the relationship between government employees and micro lenders, basically any financial institutions that they run to for assistance every time that they need money. Now, here's the thing. The public sector, the government is your employer. At the end of the month, they pay you for the job done. And after they pay that money, like, I don't see how they are going to regulate that, the behavior after they pay you the money. Now they have to tell you what to spend the money on and what not to spend the money on. That's babysitting.
No, it is, because that's also what that particular public engagement gave off, in terms of heightened levels of babysitting.
Yeah.
The reason why I also, why while sitting there, Helmut, observing the interaction between the standing committee and obviously with the minister on the opposite end, with the Bank of Namibia representatives and Namfisa representatives, and also then the second standing committee engagement, the one on the health training facilities and institutions, you could see, and that's why I always say, they come with an altruistic approach.
Yeah,
you know, these MPs of ours, that they actually come with a little bit of good faith to these engagements, because they are they're doing a fact finding.
They're trying to be, you know, they have questions they need answers to.
Yeah, they've got they're doing fact finding. They're doing a fishing expedition in good faith, because it is fishing, and they're just doing technically, and you have to view this as like they're doing their job basically. Yeah. So, and that's why sitting there as a observer, the reason why in both engagements of those two public engagements, why I could recognize the immediate flaws in the discussion taking place.
Yeah.
Because for the MPs, like in the health training facilities, like the second question, remember the second guy that presented, the guy that was impatient? The guy that said he had the MOU with the Ministry of Health in the region, and he was told that he needs to have the classroom, have the learn, have the students, and have the tutors already.
Yeah.
And then when he was asked that question, that leading question of, yeah, but don't you agree that it is incorrect to not have the other registrations? And then he answered by saying, listen, I can't do anything if the person that has to come and grade and assess me is sitting in Windhoek. And that person has to organize SMT, vehicle transport, accommodation, and all that nonsense just to come and assess him outside of Oshakati.
Yeah.
And he made a valid point, which basically also shows some of our SOEs are basically, what do they call that word? They are undercapacitated. I just made up an English word. I'm sorry.
On the, you know, on the health training institutions.
Yeah.
On the health training institutions registrations, so more like a certification.
Yeah.
That is, that the legislations around that. Mm. Actually, and it's a good thing that we have these public engagements, and I'm glad that this type of engagements are basically made public so that we can know what's going on. Because right now we know that there's in the governance sphere of the registration of of health institutions,
mm.
Health training institutions, there's one giant problem. There's a lot of, in terms of certification, yeah. There's a lot of legislative contradictions.
Yes.
Requirement number one, you are told to have a facility and have a number of students, and you must have a number of, tutors.
Yeah.
And when you are assessed for certification, you must be in session.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You must be operational.
Yeah. And also for you to be operational, you need a certificate. Okay. Hang on a second.
So Why the confusion? Yes, the people ask me. You're making me famous again, Helmut. Why the confusion?
So, in other words, get a certificate before you offer this service, but also
say,
have a demonstration of you offering this, actually offer this service so that I can assess you on how good you are at offering this service before I give you a certificate. Okay.
But you are also, but the rules say you're supposed to be registered already before you can start anything. Before you can have the building, the learners and the tutors.
You know, that confusion, again, these engagements, standing committees, you guys are doing great.
Oh no, that's gold. That's gold for us.
It's pure gold for us.
We feel like millionaires.
Look, that type of confusion from a legislative standpoint, started popping out, at least to me, it was the judiciary. In the engagement with the Constitutional Legal Affairs Committee over the Oshakati Courtroom Door, the judiciary pointed that out because when they were asked why it took that long to replace a door,
Remember,
yeah,
we still have
to. Yeah, it wasn't replaced at the time of the engagement.
We still have to establish. This is 2 years later, guys. Helmut and I still have to establish whether or not this door has been replaced.
I think you and I should make a time for and also money for an excursion to do like at least 1 week of home run in the north.
Because we want to see if that door's fixed.
Just specifically for that door. Yeah. Look, the thing is, the standing committee asked the representatives from the judiciary that why was it why hasn't the door been replaced after all this time? Because it was about 5 months at the time of the engagement.
Mm.
And the follow-up question that was basically built on top of that was, are there any alternative procurement methods that you guys could have explored to replace this? And the judiciary explained to them, they are, except the requirements around that alternative procurements are so tight that the door procurement under discussion could not have met, did not meet the requirements for us to explore that alternative.
Yeah.
And now again, you see, a legislative issue that is preventing implementation.
Yeah.
And in the health training institutions discussion, you see the exact same thing. You have the private sector that has been given basically a rule book to follow if they want to implement their training institutions, especially in the in the field of health. Except the rule book is very confusing. It's telling you to do two things all at the same time.
Yeah.
And these two things that it's telling you to do all at the same time, it's contradicting in a way that you can easily be criticizing. And in a reference again to the judiciary and the National Assembly Standing Committee on Constitutional Legal Affairs, that popped up just the following year. Mm. The Ministry of Health did exactly what the national, the standing committee was asking the judiciary to explore in the Shakati courtroom door. The following year, the Minister of Health, did the exact same thing, and then we ended up with a colorful report from the Office of the Auditor General. So again, the legislature.
Yep.
Look, if you want to be a career politician, fasten your seatbelt.
If you want to be a career government official, just know. Please, please, please.
All right, so it's a water break.
Yeah. We'll quickly take a short break, dear listeners. We'll come back right after this.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ujendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honoreta Time, Bali Heavy, Nola Natu, Heavy Bali, No Hair, Ileco, Berewa, Nora Hetatu, Natu, Bali, O Hetatu, Matatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Tune in to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM so that you can, prepare yourself for the time when you will be a politician. If you are a politician, it's a good time to, actually, it's the right time to tune in. So we are 18 minutes into the hour of 5 here on Eagle FM with your favorite duo, or you are on your favorite, on your number one talk radio station with your favorite, show that is Home Run, your drive time show. Now, this common wealth. Actually, Mandume and I, at some point, we started calling this, common poverty for some of us, because said, well, look, they keep calling it common wealth. I don't see the wealth on my end.
I also don't.
Yeah.
But do you know what the Commonwealth name actually stems from?
Well done.
The Commonwealth for Great Britain. So I said I don't like this thing. I don't like this body. I don't know why Namibia is still entertaining, participating in this thing.
I don't know why the entire Africa, now that you explain it that way, I don't know why the entire Africa is participating in this whole thing.
I mean, they wanted to say yes. But yeah, you were still saying.
Namibia. Namibia decided speaker, we're going to send a deputy speaker. But still, made several interesting points. Let's go through them one by one now, shall we? There's a Namibia's experience. And that Namibia's experience is three lines. I'm like, okay, I'm not getting the Namibia's experience here. But anyway, leveraging technology and digital tools for sustainable development. Turns out, Namibia is the expert at that. Now, Philips Katamelo, Katamelo, Deputy Speaker at the National Assembly of Namibia, delivered a speech emphasizing that digital transformation is necessary for modern governance, economic growth, and sustainable development. Our love for technology. However, he cautioned that Africa must address the digital divide to ensure technology does not create further exclusion. It's a good thing, but we have to start from electrification first. I know we have Mission 300. Is it Mission 300?
Mm.
Yeah, but that's on, again.
No, Mission 300, this is the funny thing about that thing also.
Yeah, Mission 300 is an AU thing.
No, it's a World Bank thing. I wrote about the article, it's a World Bank thing. It was the first order of business, technically, for Minister Amutse announcing Mission 300. And I was like, a World Bank thing? But then what happened to the Rural Electrification Initiative of that was announced under President Geingob's first term in 2018?
You know, we have got to really, really, really start coming up with our, start making our own money.
And it's not just about the own money. So I just wanted to, just to reiterate where this Commonwealth thing comes from.
Yeah.
The establishment of the Commonwealth collection of these countries was the Commonwealth was an evolutionary outgrowth of the British Empire. Its origins is a free association, how it currently is seen. It's a free association.
Free, huh?
its current template
is
a free association of sovereign nations comprising of the UK and a number of its former dependencies who have chosen to maintain ties of friendship and practical cooperation, who acknowledge the British monarch as symbolic head of their association. What the hood are we doing?
This is
Britannica, ne? This is Britannica.
I know that's
this is Britannica's explanation.
Yeah, Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah,
yeah. That's just a Latin way of saying Encyclopedia.
Of Britain.
Of Britain. Or for those of us that are not politically correct, we usually call it Encyclopedia Colonizer. But look, the thing is, that statement. Just read that again.
The first one or the second one?
The first one.
The first one that I read, or the second one that's the first one?
The one that you just read now.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Commonwealth is a free association of sovereign states comprising the UK and a number of its former dependencies.
Okay, now, just stop right there. Former dependencies?
But we weren't dependent on them.
No, we weren't.
We were on
actually, they depended on us.
Yeah. So they depended on South Africa even.
Look, every colonial power depended on looting. So we didn't depend on them, they depended on us. Even the language is cooked.
Yeah, the language is cooked. We depended on South Africa.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is in the beginning, it says a free, you chose to say, you know what, I'll be part of this.
Which is the question that we have to, that we're asking also, which is why? The philosophic question we're asking at the start of this engagement. Why is Namibia still part of this thing?
You know, this is why I like to say that those foreign heroes and heroines that we have at Heroes Acre.
Fallen? Fallen.
Yeah, sorry, Hangwena. Look, the thing is...
Why did you have to say Hangwena?
That's my favorite region.
The whole region will beat us up one day for no reason.
Hey, well, look, what do we do? I just like the region.
Your jokes.
Look, the thing is...
Yeah.
Look, the thing is, this is why I like to say those fallen heroes and heroines that we have at Heroes Acre. Mm. And this is not just Heroes Acre, basically the entire African continent, the liberation movement fighters. If they were to wake up just to come and look at how we are doing things just for 1 hour... A lot of I think I can list a number of presidents and parliamentarians who will get slapped into the afterlife, because the question they'll be asking is, so you're telling me I died because
you wanted to be of a part of a free association, recognizing,
because if you're still a part of this crap, what did I die for?
Yeah, still recognizing some sort of
Great Britain,
unique colonial relationship. I mean, this is Stockholm syndrome, man.
Oh yeah, now that is that. Thank you, man. Thanks.
This is Stockholm syndrome, man.
Yeah, that is Stockholm syndrome.
This is Stockholm. We're sitting now.
Actually, that's Stockholm syndrome, Pro Max.
Now I can defend Namibia's participation in SACU, ne?
Yeah.
There's a lot of Namibians that I realize that have an issue with SACU.
Yeah.
But they recognize the issue from, what do you call it? A disenfranchised position. Look, if you want to break away from SACU,
yeah,
go get the factories. Actually do trade replacement and implement trade replacement. Meaning for everything that South Africa brings into Namibia,
yeah,
you replace it with what you're making. But I don't see...
Find alternatives.
Yeah, but do you think GWM will listen to Namibia? We saw what happened with the Peugeot factory.
Yeah.
So do you think anybody else will listen to Namibia?
No, I mean, after the Peugeot thing, I would not want to listen to Namibia.
Yeah, no one would want to listen to Namibia. Even though Namibia carried much of the risk, who would want to listen to Namibia? So now you get to the discussion of the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
So why are we participating in this engagement?
Because it's Commonwealth.
If we know, we can't even ask reparations from the UK. We can't. And now I'm throwing another thing into this conversation. We can't ask reparations from the UK.
The rest of Africa can.
The rest of Africa can. They can do that.
Yeah.
But our beef is with the Germans.
Yeah.
And our beef is with the South Africans. But the South Africans are doing their utmost best in terms of, you know, they're not withdrawing businesses out of Namibia like they are doing in Nigeria. In other parts of Africa.
Oh, yeah, I read about that.
How the ShopRite group and the other companies are withdrawing from other parts of Africa because they're finding the particular policies, the trade policies in those other African countries untenable. But in Namibia, they would love to expand. They would love to expand. Now, if we look at this engagement, it's probably high time that, you know, the same politicians in our parliament literally advocate for breaking away from this ridiculous collection of countries. I mean, it's just fair, guys, because you have to ask the question about, you know, for what reason are we part of this thing? Not even the South Africans are that sinister in generating Commonwealth of former protectorate countries that they were given by the British to run. Not even they are so they put up a customs union, an economic tool that works for our benefit because we actually get money out of this thing. But we don't get any money out of the Commonwealth. Okay, speaking of correction, there might be something. But we technically aren't. I remember last year when they had that engagement of the finance ministers of the Commonwealth here in Windhoek.
Yeah.
Where I went to and I went to cover it and I was like, why is this conversation happening? You know, even though I sit with the brief that explains the why, I was still asking, why is it happening?
Yeah.
If Namibia and India can talk already to each other, why is it happening? Namibia and Malaysia can talk to each other. Why do we need this thing? Namibia and Indonesia is already talking to each other. Namibia and the Philippines already talk to each other. Why do we need... No, the Philippines is not part of them. Why do we need to talk? If there's a country we need to talk to, it's Singapore. In all honesty, it's Singapore. Helmut, I really believe, the reason why I brought that other report was the Global Justice Report.
Yeah.
Those guys are speaking from... And I really want to take away the socialist label. But if you realize you as a country, in terms of your development agenda, you've got your back against the wall in terms of how you can provide the best quality of life for your everyday citizen. Namibia has to position the Namibian society in every town and village across this country at the core of the national development agenda. And you say, you take active, purpose-driven decisions, not a policy. Please, I even asked the other day that discussion at the tourism, there was a sustainable tourism policy development discussion and back on Tuesday, or was it Monday, that I went to by the Ministry of Environment. And I kept asking the Deputy Executive Director of the Ministry of Environment. Some of the stakeholders in the audience kept saying, this policy must become a law. And then I kept asking her, are you guys aiming for an actual law that puts obligations and responsibilities on parties? Or is this just going to be a policy? And she constantly had to answer me twice because of what the other stakeholders were saying in the audience.
Yeah.
Because it was public stakeholder engagement. What the other stakeholders were saying from in the audience, look, they come from rural communities, where I don't want to use the word abuses, but let's say exploitation occurs, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not naive not to notice or recognize that exploitation would happen if a tourist comes on a plane here, comes under the conditions of a tourist visa, but actually comes in, produces a work that he or she goes and makes money off of. I recognize that. But then, it should have been NAMRA and Customs, NAMRA and Immigration. They should have stopped that guy and asked, hey, listen, bro, you're coming in on a tourist visa, you're filling in tourist on the form, but this equipment is heavy-duty equipment.
Yeah.
You must come in to do a job. So where's your permit? If you don't have a permit, stay here. You can't enter Namibia. Until we see what this is for and who you're coming to. So, things like that's an immigration function. Under who is immigration? Ministry of Home Affairs. Who was hosting the public stakeholder engagement? Ministry of Environment. So, you once again see the siloed operation take a manifest. Yeah. Okay. Granted. Now, if we as Namibia want to take targeted decisions or make decisions. Yes, Namibia loves this thing of let's work together. But you can see, and I feel sorry for the government officials. I really feel sorry for them. From the ministers to the prime minister to our president even. You see on their behalf, they really want to prove a point by doing the right thing, implementing the right stuff, getting the ducks in order on their side. You don't see it on the private sector side. And if you see it on the private sector side, it's concentrated in mining. It's concentrated in industries that not everybody wants to get involved in, like agriculture. It's concentrated in far-off infrastructure developments that not every Namibian can get involved in. And you see the limitations immediately.
Yeah.
right? Now, if you ask, okay, what about affordable housing? Then you see there's a whole bunch of, there's a whole choir of birds chirping and crickets singing on the one side, because now you have to go look for, okay, what about affordable housing? Eliminate some of the barriers in affordable housing, or come through with a purposeful, a purposeful, I don't want to say policies, man.
Blueprint?
A blueprint, yeah. Absolutely. Wonderful, Helmut. Thank you for the English. Come through with a blueprint that people can invest in, but it actually eliminates a lot of the cost barriers, right? Mm. For example, like in Windhoek, just servicing an ERF. Let's say, for example, City of Windhoek gives away ERVN for first-time homeowners or property owners. But City of Windhoek says, okay, there's a subsidy potential that eliminates buying the ERF. But then when you go to service the ERF, but the ERF is unserviced, but when you want to service the ERF, servicing is 150,000 because of the geography. I'm just giving a number. I'm just spitballing, guys. That's all I'm doing. I'm just spitballing some numbers. So it's 150 grand to service. So now you're already sit and City of Windhoek then still maintains that those conditions of in the area that you are going to stay, that you have this property in and where you're going to build your house on, you must build it to the average or the median. The mean house price, the average house price in that vicinity. So let's, for example, say the Ervin, these free Ervin supposedly are on the other side of Simbabazia. The average house price, the average property price in Simbabazia is 1 million. So now you have to build a house to the value of 1 million.
Yeah.
No bank is going to give you that money. Not in your salary, not in my salary. No bank is going to give you that money. So already the barriers still exist. If we look at what, for example, Singapore achieved. Helmut, Singapore's main aim, and this is not a joke, guys. Even Francisco from Ulwazi sat here mentioning it. He didn't mention Singapore, but he sat here mentioning it. If a government like Singapore, since 1945, after they became independent from the same British Commonwealth.
Oh, of course.
When Singapore was formed, they have been building government housing since 1945. This is not leaving things up to like the current situation, leaving things up to the private sector who then adds their costs on, who all want to drive G-Wagons and Toyota Land Cruiser Prados and Lexus Prados, not mentioning any names there. I'm talking about the Lexus owners. I'm just mentioning the car brands because they're all 1 million.
I'd have gone with the Range Rover, but anyway.
Okay, Range Rover?
Mm-hmm.
No, Helmut. Range Rover is a cheap car.
Custom license plate.
It's a cheap car. Do you know which of the Land Rovers are expensive?
No, when you change the range to Land, then you're on a whole different.
No,
price,
the
brother.
Car is a Land Rover. The brand is a Land Rover. The model is a Range. A Range Rover is a cheap car.
No.
It's like these young people who believe driving a Merc makes them look young. No, it makes you look old. Chase out. No, the idea is not to look old.
Okay, hang on a second.
The expensive Land Rover is the new Discovery that comes in at a whopping 2 million smackaroos.
Ew.
Yes. The tire is so big on that Discovery. It's a tire you don't easily find in the tire shops of Namibia.
You know what?
Because the I think the thing is this broad. The tire is this broad.
Jeremy Clarkson said about, I think it was, he was comparing a Range Rover and a Toyota.
Yeah.
If you want to go into the bush, you can take a Range Rover, but if you want to go to the bush and come back, take a Toyota.
Of course.
If you're planning on staying, sure, just go. But if your plan is to come back,
but they even said the old Land Rover, what was the one's name?
Okay,
Discovery.
you know, okay,
Range Rover.
Okay, their Defender series.
The Defender, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the Land Rover you took into the bush.
Oh,
And you could, if it was wet conditions, you could come back. Wet conditions.
I saw, you know.
But if it was Namibia conditions, sand, everybody will even tell you, okay, if you don't have a Land Cruiser there, at least use an Isuzu.
There's one Namibian who is very brutal, you know, drives a Land Rover.
Yeah.
Black one. Very nice car. Mm. I saw it in town once, and it's written here, and it's written at the back that, it's not a Jeep, it's a Land Rover.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like a Jeep, but for men. I'm like, bro, he's gonna start a fight in this town.
But the Jeeps are also good. I mean, okay. In American context, man.
Yeah.
The two Jeeps that are good. The two Jeeps of the Jeep series.
Yeah, the Wrangler or the...
The Wrangler and the Gladiator, which is their Bucky.
Yeah.
Because they... But the issues that the Americans have with those two Jeeps, with those two cars, is the engine.
Of course. That's a German and Japan thing.
Yeah. No, not really. Because for the Americans, it's who the people who are building the engine... Are Italian. Do you get the I almost said the dichotomy.
Okay, so that's the funny thing.
Because it's Fiat. Fiat owns Jeep.
Yeah.
The Fiat group.
Yeah.
Or the Fiat car company group. They Fiat and Ferrari company. Because Fiat also owns Ferrari. So it's Fiat that owns Jeep. The group's name is Stellantis. So Stellantis knows Fiat and Ferrari needs an Alfa Romeo is the other brand. But when they bought Jeep from the Daimler Chrysler group, which was the group that owned BMW, no, that owned Mercedes, and what was the other brand? And that other Chrysler cars.
Yeah.
When they bought Jeep from the Daimler Chrysler group, the Italians came with their own ideas. Like the Chinese came with their own ideas for is it Volvo? Yeah, for Volvo. Now Volvo is this complete electronic hybrid, alles goederse. No one even wants to look at Volvo. It's only the Swedes looking at Volvo.
Volvo is electronic as a heck.
Because everybody is seeing, but Volvo is no longer Volvo. Volvo is no longer the station wagon that could off-road with you.
No.
Your mom's car could drive everywhere if your mom owned.
Don't do that today.
That car could drive everywhere, and that car was before Audi got the Quattro system. It was that car. That car was Quattro.
Get one sensor problem and you're cooked. okay.
Yeah.
Let me bring you back to our deputy speaker.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Coming back, guys. From
now that we are on this whole, you know, census, because our deputy speaker emphasized technology a lot, which I found funny because we don't even have a cybersecurity bill, and we just did our AI readiness and found out that you know what, one of our biggest problem, legislation, and we are back to school, and then in Joburg, you know. In preparation for that, pictures at the end of the day, this event.
For the public relations, for the press statement.
Yeah. So, on technology, this is what, this is what our deputy speaker had to say. Namibia's experience. The deputy speaker highlighted the positive impact of digital transformation in sectors such as education, digital learning. And that's where I first stopped and we're like, Deputy Speaker, are you familiar with the Norwegian experiment? Technology and education, you're going to have to be very specific because the two have been noticed not to be very good at going hand in hand.
Mm.
Yeah. So, but then the Deputy Speaker went on to point out that, digital transformation in sectors such as education, for digital learning and healthcare, for telemedicine and agriculture, for satellite forecasting and youth empowerment, for digital skills and innovation hubs.
Mm.
Yeah. Remember the Interpol, document I sent, the Interpol link I sent you?
Yeah.
Yeah. AI is dominating the cyber, you know, the cyber space.
The cyber attack space.
Yeah. Cyber attacks, AI is being used in cyber attacks, making them even more nefarious and difficult to detect and very, 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 very efficient compared to the traditional way of doing it.
No.
Parliamentary action. Oh, that's my favorite part.
Yeah.
He urged parliaments to embrace digital transformation by developing legislations on AI. Deputy Speaker, again, for the millionth time, we don't have one. Legislations on AI, data protection and cybersecurity. I'm like, right. So we're just here to talk about things we don't have.
Yeah. Which is becoming a problem, Helmut, because you can see how we are basically cutting and shooting our own feet and hands off, because we will need hands and feet basically to do the job, but we are busy cutting it off because, first and foremost, it's one of the reasons why I continuously say that even the National Assembly, I mean, okay, let's bring in an update that happened just yesterday.
Yeah.
So, the IPC submitted a motion to remove the speaker, our speaker that was there in Johannesburg.
Our deputy speaker was in Joburg.
Both of them was in Joburg.
Yeah, both were in. Okay, so hang on a second, both of them.
Yeah,
that's nice.
So, but it was our deputy speaker speaking in that scenario. So yesterday in the parliament, IPC submits a motion to remove Speaker Kugunkelwa Amadila.
Yeah.
But if you read the reason, if you read up on the reason as to why,
yeah,
it's because they were satisfied that she moved on with a debating point that they had cited, which
they were satisfied, or they weren't satisfied.
They were not satisfied.
Yeah.
Where she felt satisfied in moving the discussion or the procession of
forward
of the order of events or of the day. Let's say, you know, the agenda, moving the agenda.
In other words, they felt like they, you know, the speaker did not allow them to exhaust their point before moving on. Okay.
Yeah. That's the discussion. If you try to wonder what was the point, it was because the opposition parties wanted to bring objections to one of the ruling party statements that were made at a specific time. So they mentioned two occurrences where this happened. Now you go ask yourself, does this have to do with anything of the pending bills, needed necessary legislation that we need to advance Namibia's economic agenda?
Yeah.
No.
So we're just playing politics?
Yes. This in
it. That's kindergarten level petty.
Exactly. Helmut, I still foresee a future where after 2030, we will sit with a massive issue in terms of not having a cybersecurity legislation in place.
Access and information.
Unfortunately,
AI,
CRAN will still CRAN's cyber response task force will still be operating on a bill. We will not have a data protection legislation in place. Even this stakeholder engagement that I went to this past Monday at NIPAM, hosted by Ministry of Environment, this one about the sustainable tourism, they were talking about in things that sounded like invasion of privacy without having the law to back up the suggestion that the people were making. They wanted to collect tracking data of tourists. Invasion of privacy. Many of the stakeholders don't know what invasion of privacy is. Just because a tourist comes and makes photos and shoots a social media video of themselves in a rural setting. Now we've got Namibians calling for invasion of privacy of people, tracking and tracing tourists.
Eesh.
Based on what laws are you suggesting these things?
Okay, first of all, if I was a tourist and you told me that I'm going to be, you know, every single of my movement is going to be tracked.
I'm not going to come to you in the country, and then it's a problem. Then it'll be a problem because there's no cash flow flowing to that rural community anymore because visitors are not showing up. So Namibia really has to, we really need to basically do our jobs, if it comes to the lawmaking side of things, really engage with the ministries who are at the forefront of basically administration and, you know, regulation and meeting out these various policies and laws, instead of us having fanciful ideas of how to impede on the rights of others. Now, there's another thing. There's another peculiarity that's obviously still present. The peculiarity is based off of these presiding officers, these people that went to Johannesburg for this particular Commonwealth Conference of Speakers and Presiding Officers, is what did they expect to achieve by going to this engagement?
Oh.
You see, Hamoud, there's a lovely thing there. I know, it's in the report. I know it's in the report. But there's a lovely thing.
That's my favorite part of the report.
There's a lovely thing that I was taught while working in corporate. We are still in corporate, in the private sector element. I don't know why people love calling private sector corporate, because then that means the government can also be, the public sector can also be corporate. But in private sector, you were told, you were educated in, and this is in-house, industry, company, on-the-job training that you get.
Yeah.
Which is just rewiring your mind, how you think. You are taught, if you're going to a meeting, why are you going to this meeting? Fundamentally, ask that question.
Why?
Why are you going to this meeting? What are you going to do? What are you going to achieve? Why are we going to spend money sending you with SNT to the coast, to the north, to the south, to the east of Namibia to go and do what there? What are you going to do? What are we going to achieve? And how are we going to recuperate the costs that we would be incurring by sending you there? Fundamental questions being asked.
Yeah.
But I want you to answer that part, Hamoud.
Thank you very much for the floor, Mr. Links.
Yeah, it seems like all the spit in my mouth dried up now from...
A resolution of the conference. Let me change the camera.
Yeah. Yes, please, please, please.
Right. Resolutions of the conference. The 19 CSPOC, that's a Commonwealth of you know, speakers and presiding officers, abbreviation. In the now the 19th CSPOC Africa region concluded with the adoption of the following comprehensive resolutions. Keyword comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All encompassing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love
enhanced. Oh yeah, on enhanced public trust. We, the presiding officers and speakers.
Mm.
This is the conclusion we have reached in terms of resolutions. On enhanced public trust in governance, the conference urged African parliaments to strengthen mechanism for transparency, accountability, integrity, and responsiveness to enhance citizen trust in governance.
Mm.
They called upon parliaments to promote meaningful citizen participation through public hearing, constituency engagement, petitions, and e-systems. And they encouraged presiding officers to foster ethical leadership and uphold the highest standard of parliamentary conduct. Now, I just want to focus on the first two. The first two, Namibia is already, Namibia has that, so if you, you know, we passed that one with flying colors. Because of
which one?
Consultations. Oh, we got that.
Oh, no, we do that. No.
Standing
do
that. Committees. Lovely. Oh, no, we got that.
Lovely. Public stakeholder engagements. Lovely. That's us. I'm really not that dark. Please. No. That's production, guys. If you see her.
I know. Oh, okay. Oh, so. Hey, Francina.
So it wasn't for me?
No, it's definitely not for you. Yeah. Anyway, and also thanks for the extra light. So the two things that I pointed out that Namibia is already shining, you know, is we're already shining.
Mm.
Is the first one, which is you know African parliaments being urged to strengthen mechanisms of transparency, accountability, integrity, and responsiveness to enhance citizens' trust in governance.
Yeah.
For me, the consultations, fact-finding missions that's basically conducted by both the National Council and National Assembly Standing Committees, that falls under this category, which is an awesome thing. And the second one being, calling upon parliamentarians to promote meaningful citizen participation through public hearing. This for me against public consultations. And constituency engagements, petitions, and e-systems. I would throw, your state of the region address under this category. So you have this, increase in initiatives of public representative to citizen, engagements.
Yeah.
Which again, Namibia, we're doing awesome. And then come to, parliaments, they encourage parliaments to strengthen oversight over executive and the utilization of public resources. Well, there's a lot of question marks there. And they called for enhanced communication strategies to improve public understanding of parliamentary functions. Now, on this one is very important because it brings, it takes us back to our, to the public engagements and the consultations and fact-finding missions we just referenced.
Mm.
We still have to work on the language. We have got to stop assuming that everyone is going to understand our verbosity. Break it down. In a very, 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 very simple language. And actually take it a step further.
Mm.
Translate. Okay, we have the standing committee reports. They come out, all the time and they have all this amazing information. And I understand that our, English is our official language. But the goal is not to reach Queen Elizabeth. The goal is to reach, Helmut in the far deep sides of Divundu. How do we get that information there?
Mm.
And I know that, you can find these documents on the, on the website or, on the parliamentary website. But again, my problem, at least personally, is that they're all in one language, which makes it look like we are just doing it to tick stuff off our to-do list.
Yep.
Like, you know what, we did this, but how many people did we actually reach? And even if we reached this number of people during our face-to-face engagements, how many of them understood the language that we understood the language, let alone the information that we're trying to communicate? Now, moving on. And they called for enhanced communication. I went through that, and then they move on to the next one: reforming parliamentary leadership and strengthening institutional capacity. Dwight, you take over that one. Institutional capacity.
Institutional capacity
Page 9
was even mentioned since the start of the report itself.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, this is resolutions. It's only a 12-page report, guys, literally. That's how small this report is.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're very small.
Yeah. It was summarized to such a level, it wasn't like the other, there's still an IPU report that we've got to get through.
Yeah.
But it was like the IPU reports of like last year and the year before, where we had to go through, first they went to white meeting, had a whole discussion there, then to another meeting, a whole discussion here, another meeting. But everything is not related to everything else because it just basically shows the itinerary of where the people went.
Yeah.
So you went with public trust, right?
Yeah.
So reforming the parliamentary leadership and strengthening institutional capacity. Okay, so at the start, what we already began on was basically the... Helmut, I still forgot to make the Singapore reference. Sorry, man. Okay. So... there's this other content creator, an Australian, the teacher, the guy that calls himself Punter's Politics. So, and he's even got a Facebook page where he does his little skits, stand-up skits on. You know, that's those things that you do as well.
Uh-huh.
But he uses like a green screen effect to make his point.
Yeah.
And he once did a presentation on which other country still does government housing and sells it to new homeowners. Singapore, that's why I referenced Singapore. So he's obviously representing Australia. On the other side, he represents Singapore. And in the Australian context, they're like us. The government doesn't want to get involved with building government housing and then selling it at a massively subsidized rate to the ordinary person. We still have participants taking place, even though you can think of the mass housing program as a government housing initiative, but it's taking place in all other parts of the country except for where the potential real needs are.
Mm.
When I say real need, where you have the local authorities literally are dealing with informal housing parts of their towns growing faster than the formalized part of their town. And that is Okahandja, it's Windhoek. I don't know about Rehoboth, but Rehoboth is pretty close to Windhoek. So let's for now just stay on Okahandja and Windhoek, Swakopmund and Walvis Bay, and who else is there? There's another town. There is another town. I think it's Gobabis, I think. And in those settings, right, you are sitting with a gamble of, okay, how do you approach the housing economy? Here's the funny thing. Nowhere in the history of humanity have you ever heard of a human that can produce earth.
No.
Let's achieve that fact today for the first time. Nowhere in the history of humanity,
yeah,
of the known human history, has a human ever produced or manufactured earth. We found it. It's a natural thing. It's right there. So, on that particular indication, obviously, of that Singapore-Australia reference from that content creator, Punters Politics,
yeah,
he was citing, why is it so difficult specifically for people, for, you know, the lawmakers and even the governments of the day to recognize that if your population has a need, you meet the need. You address the need. You position yourself to work for the need of the people, of, you know, of your population. When you come to this particular report, this report and the participants in this report, they obviously approach this engagement from, you know, from a good faith standing, meaning we showed up in good faith. We recognize there are issues.
Mm-hmm.
We recognize the youth is the future. We recognize XYZ, XYZ, XYZ. Yet, when you look at reforming parliamentary leadership, what do you mean by this? When you look at strengthening institutional capacity, what do you mean by that? For example, they said emphasize the need for innovative and responsive parliamentary leadership capable of addressing contemporary socioeconomic challenges. How, if you've got an executive in your government, if your country has three branches, the executive is the one that's there to meet the socioeconomic challenges. The legislative one is there, from what I've seen, for we are allowing you to participate because we feel sorry. No, let's be honest, guys. This is what politics does. It's an ugly, childish game, basically, where they say, okay,
you know what?
We will allow you to still have a say in the broader scheme of things. Because nobody wants to see a pure manifestation of some sort of authoritarian situation manifest. So that's why you've got the division of power situation.
Yeah.
You've got the judiciary one side, you've got lawmakers one side, and you've got the executive one side. But the executive are the ones implementing. Where have you seen a parliament implement?
Well, after a fact-finding mission?
Where have we seen a parliament implement, Helmut?
Not that. Well, don't those guys just not give recommendations?
Not even the budgets. The budget is at the start of everything.
Yeah.
And but, even at the start of a budget approval, which is the, what do they call that thing? The arrangement. What is that thing's name? That process. With the ministers motivate why the budget that they requested from Ministry of Finance after Minister Shafuda submitted her budget, they then have to start that budget appropriation, yes, the appropriation process. That's the only thing. And even then, what a minister of a ministry motivates at the appropriation phase can be completely different from what the budget happens in the ministry. That's why I ask you once again, what has a parliament, what does a legislative implement? Look, it's a good for the philosophical,
mm-hmm.
because the examples exist in real life. But the philosophical one is, if the implementer is actually the executive and not the legislative,
yeah.
Well, what did they implement? Well, what can they implement? What powers do they have to also basically get to the statement of the need for innovative and responsive parliamentary leadership?
You know, it only makes sense for me if you look at it from an entire governance standpoint, because everything that you are planning on implementing, you need pieces of legislation. It's going to be, it's going to run on.
Yeah.
And these pieces of these legislations are compiled, or more like, drafted and then debated on by the parliament, and then passed to the executive branch, obviously, for the president to perform the magic with a pen to basically convert them from bills to active laws that have legal authority and enforcement behind them.
Yeah.
And if you just look at that example from a legislative standpoint, alone, it's not going to have it's not going to have any weight. As the legislative, and this is the genius part of the separation of powers, because as the legislative branch, they can debate as much laws as they want, they can debate as much bills, if you want to be technical, as they want, but they are not going to have any type of legal authority for the judiciary. Or anyone living in Namibia, until they are approved by the executive branch.
Yeah.
And this is the genius part of the separation of power. It makes sense. The implementation part makes sense if you look at it from an entire government standpoint.
Yes.
But if you look at it from a legislative standpoint only, it's not going to have any effect.
And that which you now explained is based on the premise that there's some sort of cohesion or synergy.
Oh boy, that part.
The synergy and the cohesion exists.
Yeah.
Because if the synergy and the cohesion, for example, like the Circus Act of yesterday.
Yeah.
Nah? Because now Parliament was supposed to happen today as well.
Yeah.
But now it's adjourned to Monday. Because now the Prime Minister has to make a decision about things. But here's the funny thing.
Yeah.
The motion was not, I mean, there was a debate between the journalists about, is the motion accepted or is it tabled? What is it? And apparently that process had not taken place yet. The motion was just read, but the motion wasn't like delivered, because the presiding officer, like the speaker said, she can't make a decision to say yes to tabling if it impacts her role, if it's about her role. So that would be like you being player and referee on yourself.
Would you be early to your own execution?
No, you wouldn't even say yes to your own execution. You would say, you know what, let's bounce it on the other side of the wall.
Let's push it to 2063. So, most likely going to be dead by then. So
Prime Minister Ngurare basically adjourned the Parliament, the National Assembly session, from yesterday to next week Monday. Now, the reason why I'm describing that scenario is I'm exactly showing the lack of synergy taking place. Why? Yeah. Because now a speaker, a motion to remove the current speaker, because I, I, You really have to show me an error so grave, Helmut. So grave.
Yeah.
Nah, that you could basically say, okay, let's for example say the current ongoing court case against the former speaker, Gajavivi, brought on by LBM.
Yeah. Nah?
In that scenario, I can understand the court case's motivations. The merits.
So if he was still a speaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The motivations for it. Yeah. Meaning, he suspended a discussion on national interest, which is the joint declaration. He suspended the discussion, the debate on it.
Yeah.
Because when the joint declaration came for debate to the National Assembly, it was only debated for a week. And this thing had profound, this document has profound socioeconomic, this particular scenario, it has profound socioeconomic impact on Namibia's, which destination Namibia will take from after, if Namibia says yes of adopting the joint declaration as it was at that time.
Yeah.
And he suspended the discussion with a promise that it will come back for debate after a certain period.
But it didn't.
It didn't, and then the legal action was then started.
Yeah.
So, I understand such a scenario. But regarding the current discussion where we are.
I didn't finish my point.
So now you are crying because you didn't finish your point. But the other scenario, which is a court case, was based upon this is about correcting an injustice scenario, and this key conversation was just swept under the rug.
Okay, I'm no parliamentarian, but if you didn't finish my point, then I'll just bring it up again.
Yeah, you just submit it again. If it was that's how you look at certain systems. The debate, look, a speaker can say, okay, we finish arguing here about this point. Then I stand up again next week and I bring up the point there again. And then I bring up the point there again on the other side.
You know, this is actually a very interesting one for me because I'm looking at it from the perspective of actually both sides. One, and I'm pretty sure this is what the prime minister is basically going through or is going to go through with the help of his advisors, the legal advisors that he has. Under what conditions can a speaker proceed without completing a point that is being discussed? What are the conditions? If those conditions are met, then problem solved. And the speaker is going to address that with the prime minister is going to address that with the speaker. But if those conditions were not met, I think it's both. If the conditions were met or the conditions were not met, both of these things is basically something that the prime minister, as you can imagine, will have to go through.
Yeah,
because one thing I have learned from our elections is that we have a legal system that we're not perfect at it, but we try to the best of our ability compared to a lot of other countries to abide by it. Because in a lot of cases, chairs would have gone flying, but they didn't. That shows a degree of maturity to me. Mm. Yeah. So they decided, you know what, I'm not gonna, throw a chair in your face. Because, that is not how you settle disputes. The way of settling dispute is, I file this series of documents against you to this relevant authority.
Yeah.
And this, the authority in this case is the Prime Minister. And they did exactly that. So, from the approach of the disagreement, for me is showing just a very grown-up way of solving problems.
Yeah. Okay. I wouldn't even go like. I wouldn't even use the word grown-up alongside that example because it's the risk that an electorate runs, Helmut, in terms of looking at okay, what can the people I voted for get right?
Yeah.
So case study, like this particular report itself. Now the thing closed in on me. Okay. That particular point of dealing with socioeconomic issues.
Yeah.
Socioeconomic issues is such a wide label. Such a broad label.
Really Helmut, broad.
And just on my, just like specifically like on my social media feed, not my feed, but the feed from the accounts that I follow, which include organizations and so forth and so on. There's another entity gallivanting here all across Namibia, given the freedom of Namibia to promote and engage and bring responsible entities together to basically advance Namibia's socioeconomic development. But this is not an entity we voted for. This is an entity working in conjunction, and it's a foreign entity. It's an entity working in conjunction with the Namibian government, meaning with respective ministries, offices, and agencies. And this entity is doing more. It's doing more than what political parties or basically the representatives that we vote for at the at every 5-year cycle into the National Assembly and National Council. This entity does more than these than our favorite influencers, because that's what a politician is an influencer, than our favorite political influencer. And guess who this entity is?
Yeah.
That is doing more than members of parliament sitting in parliament or sitting in National Assembly or National Council. It's GIZ.
Oh man, look.
They brought together the South African Marine Spatial Planning Steering Committee here in Namibia. They brought those people to us. They brought together other stakeholders in Lüderitz, Rehoboth and City of Windhoek representatives regarding how Lüderitz can best learn from Rehoboth and City of Windhoek on dealing on formalizing informal settlements. They are doing more than a standing committee from National Council or from National Assembly. And yet, in this, what's this page? Page 9, that first point. I'm still stuck on that first point, guys. Because you immediately see the opposite happening in reality in Namibia.
Yeah.
Which is addressing contemporary socioeconomic challenges. So, lack of synergy. The first thing is dealing with lack of synergy. The second thing is the encouragement of parliaments to modernize their rules, their procedures, and institutional frameworks. I don't think they need the encouragement of modernization. If people just read, there won't be issues. So let's ignore that part.
That simple.
It's that simple. If people read, you just ignore it. They called for the increased investment in capacity development or capacity building programs for speakers, MPs, and parliamentary staff, including advanced research capacity. I believe in the advanced research capacity. I don't believe in the aspect of capacity development because the way I see it, for example, our first 3 speakers, the guy before Kasha Vivi was also, I think it was Tuben Gurirab. Was it Tuben Gurirab, Helmut? Before Kasha Vivi.
Hang on a second. How long have I been following our speakers?
Because even up to Speaker Kubungelo Amadila, she's also a very educated person. So, but the thing is, she's got to deal with the day-to-days of members of parliament. The same also, I don't know about Chair, what's his name? Lucas Mua. I don't know about his educational background. But I know that Kungelwa Madila at least has a couple of degrees. Okay, obviously not on the level of our favorite politician.
Don't.
We're not going to mention names. Definitely.
Please don't.
We still consider him probably Namibia's most educated person.
Yeah.
But even in that scenario, I mean, the speaker herself would know how to do her research. What I think this is speaking to is bringing in other highly skilled Namibians, for example, in a Namibian context, to work around the MPs in researching on behalf of the MPs from National Assembly to National Council. So if the National Council guys want to understand what is Namibia's unemployment rate, the research department of the parliament would know, let me go source the labor force survey statistics of 2023 from the NSA. They go do that. If they know these MPs of a standing committee want a presentation from a specific functionary in the Namibian economy, then that researcher knows, okay, let's go set up a meeting with this particular association that represents this particular sector or industry. Okay, I almost said not to do some of the known examples that we referenced, but that was also fact-finding. So, yes, to help them specifically in identifying the knowledge bases representing multiple facets of the Namibian economy, the Namibian society. Yet. It's what we do with that information. It's how we approach that information. Last week, Helmut, when David and I, we dissected the, which standing committee report was that? When David and I, when you had your opportunity to rest last week, we did Hubli on Friday. Monday.
Yeah, we did Hubli together.
Yeah, we did Hubli. We did
Hubli, the report, not the...
Yeah, we didn't sit and smoke together, guys. Sorry about that. So we looked at the report. David and I, we looked at the report for youth development. Yeah. About the engagement that took place in Otjiwarongo on youth development and ICT. Yeah, no? For higher education. We looked at that last week. In that engagement now, I know for sure, probably, there might have been a previous instance where the previous National Council Standing Committee of the same name probably did the exact same fact-finding mission of trying to understand the role of the stakeholders within Namibia's ecosystem of higher education. Because in that report, if you ever looked at that report, Helmut, in that report, every stakeholder has explained what you do, what is your current challenges, and the recommendations that we can associate to your chapter in the report.
Yeah.
Every stakeholder has such a particular segment on their engagement with the standing committee. Now, it makes it a little bit tedious, but it sort of like details and clusters, you know, each engagement together so that you can, you know, for ease of reading as a reader, for ease of reading, you just cascade through each particular engagement. But then you sit there asking yourself with pivotal questions of, yeah, but the NQA has been in existence for so long. The National Council for Higher Education has been in existence for so long. The Namibia Training Authority has been existing for so long. Are you telling us that we've got MPs who don't know that these entities exist, or who don't know about the policies that the ministries had developed in order to champion certain particular initiatives in Namibia? For example, do our MPs know about the national basic education policies? For example, not the one we did last year, the one that speaks about a holistic approach to basic education, but the one that predates that one, the one about inclusive education. Remember the one that we looked at, the inclusive education one, that still had what's that minister's name, who's the founder of IUM,
David Amadi.
Yeah, where he was still minister of where it was still known as basic education. So, because he wrote most of that policy, or the ministry that he administered then wrote that policy of inclusive, of Namibia's inclusive basic education landscape.
Yeah.
So from that policy direction coming this way, do they know about that, for example, such particular policies?
Yeah, you know, this is where I always actually just for two things. One, benefit of the doubt, and also the sake of my sanity.
Mm.
I like to assume that they are aware of this because I don't want to assume the opposite,
No, no, but then in that scenario, Helmut,
yeah,
we are committing one of the gravest sins in basic research, meaning we didn't interrogate whether they know.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But since they engage with higher education people,
yeah,
we are sitting with sort of like a precondition also of assuming that they probably went like, ah, who cares about basic education? Let's go and look at higher education. But you can't start.
You know, it's just semantics at this point.
But you can't go and start just there ad hocly with higher education if you don't know about the pressures in basic education. Because in the higher education engagement last week, David and I saw that, was it NTA? No, it was NCHE. NCHE referenced that thing that we kept citing about the teachers. They kept citing that there are courses overproducing professionals.
Especially in lower primary.
Yeah. And no one is telling the institutions, hey, close the tap.
Yeah, but here's the thing. That's a no-brainer. That is as obvious. Look, you and I sitting in the studio here are aware of this information, and the minister of,
and these MPs now.
Yeah, the minister of education. The minister of education was that last year.
Yeah,
yeah, made that information public. So, and that again, the key word is that she didn't whisper the information to you and I. She made that public, that there are some certain, there are some levels in this education, high institution education curriculum that is being overproduced. Mm. And that is a lower primary. Now, if you are going to study anything related to education, think high school type of subjects.
And then it's because none of these teachers, these new graduates, they don't want to deal with people's teenagers.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When you look at it that way, you see that they're actually caught between a rock and a hard place.
Mm.
It's either you avoid dealing with hormone driven teenagers, and then end up struggling to get a job, or you study a course that will put you directly in a crossfire with some
hormone driven teenager.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're not monsters. We have all been through that phase, and we gave a lot of people just a fair share of headaches.
Mm.
But now we're here acting all mature, like we study high school subjects and then get a taste of your own medicine that you gave a couple of teachers. Yeah.
Are you now saying some of those graduates were also medicine dressed up as blessings?
Dwight, who wasn't? Each and every single one of us remember that one teacher we gave a headache.
You know, I'll sit here live on air lying to all of you. I wasn't that kind of teenager.
Right. Of course you weren't.
I was a total, total sweetheart.
Well behaved.
A word I don't use often either. Hint, hint.
I never, never, never made noise in class. Right.
Never. Right. That's not me.
I mean, look, at this point, if you are telling kids that, you may as well just become a politician because you're already good at it.
You say we have to already, the groundwork is sorted.
No, for you and I, thanks to Homerun, we don't stand a chance. But look at this.
An actual opposite, when I'm outside the studio now, I'm a completely different person.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You remember the Jeffrey character from Game of Thrones?
Mm.
How people that were obsessed with the show hated, the actor in real life.
And Homeboy was just a calm guy.
Yeah, it turns out it was just this one very normal human being, nowhere near anything that is actually portrayed by his character in the TV show.
Mm.
I think, I have a sneaky suspicion already has that, the same, effect.
Mm.
Yeah, you'll be, just sitting here thinking that, Helmut speaks, Namlish, or Kavango Lish, or Angwena Lish the whole day. No, he doesn't.
Mm.
He's just sound all professional all the time. Yeah. Meet him at Kapana, a whole different person.
Mm.
But now, come back to your point of being aware of what's being made public. Look, I think the issue we have here with regards to the courses that are being overproduced is the same issue that we have with housing.
Yeah.
We don't want to shake the tree. The institutions that are producing this lower primary, take for example, lower primary education courses, you already have an established faculty.
Yeah.
With materials being allocated, and now shifting, almost like making a single change in that, because it's basically if it was in production, you would just call it a supply chain.
Mm.
If you move one piece,
it would have been upstream and downstream.
Upstream and downstream.
It would have been upstream and downstream. You know it.
You make it sound like they are all covered in Vaseline. But anyway, the thing is, if you move, if you move the student,
yeah.
You take for example, if come 2027, everyone that is listening right now shares the information as far as wide enough so that everyone that is planning on studying education, everyone that's in grade 12 and they're planning on studying education, they apply for they apply for only tertiary subjects.
Mm.
First of all, do we have enough space to accommodate all of them?
Mm.
And then, what do we do to those institutions more like, to the faculties, to the education faculties that offered lower education courses? Those ones will also have to be moved.
Yeah.
So, and this is for both the public or private sector. You will have to do the adjustment to fit the status quo.
Yeah.
Now, the question here is, as an institution, would you be willing to make that change? Because look, the thing is, we have to. It's the change that we have to.
Yeah, but
because
yeah,
we just can't keep producing. It's either we have to. It's either we make the change that the Minister of Education suggested, or you have to build more schools. Because one thing we know is that we have a lot of young people, and parents are still queuing up to register their kids. It's either you have to build more schools and employ all these teachers because there is potential for that, or you have to follow the Minister of Education's advice.
Yep.
Which one are you gonna go with is actually one of those reasons why I always look at things like this and go like, thank heavens I'm not in the public sector. This job is tough.
Yes, Hamid, it is. Because, but that job is also easy. Do you know why? For example, if the minister, because you showed us now two particular pieces of public advice.
Yeah.
The minister directing, let's say, redirecting graduates to start to be more channeled into
high school type of
high school basic education or secondary basic education versus just producing and then having to build more schools.
Yeah.
Building more schools means employing people with money you are not yet cleared to spend as a ministry.
Mm.
And the easier one is, hey, you tell the university, hey, advise there at career guidance day. Advise that young person wants to study an education degree to take up a high school
subjects.
Yeah,
high school courses.
Yeah,
not lower primary.
Don't advise them already. The market is saturated. The labor force is saturated.
Okay, but here's the thing. But how long, even if that adjustment was made, how long are we going to do that before we start seeing the same saturation in high school phase?
Exactly, Hamoud. And
yeah.
And that is a statistic not coming out. That's a data set not coming out. Why do we only hear of the bottleneck in 2025?
Yeah,
that bottleneck actually existed pre-COVID.
Yeah, exactly.
So why do we only hear about the bottleneck, about the
only when the problem shows up.
And the problem becomes obvious and vocal and the people are complaining and the people want to protest. Why do we hear about the bottleneck only then?
Oh, man, you just keep ruining today's show. Okay, now look at it this way. Okay, it's actually more painful when you think of it that way, because you should have told me this when I was in high school.
Exactly.
Now that I have, I went through school, graduated, and found out that the job market, and 5 years of looking for a job, that's when you are telling me that the market is saturated.
Yes, after spending money getting a degree.
Why
the degree, didn't? And you're in debt for the thing, for the entity you borrowed the money from, to study the degree. Now you're being told, no, there's too much of you.
So this is something that, this is the statistics that we should have gathered and then shared them with, with the basic education ministry to distribute them in all types of, in high schools across the country, so that those ones in grade 12, or more like, and also just they distribute all that to to high institutions, so that they know that, okay, you know what, this market is oversaturated.
Yeah.
We need a diversion. We need to divert into some different.
But here's the thing. The economic planners, which sits in ministries, they don't realize this, but their economic plan, the economic planners don't have hair on their chest to tell the universities, hello, stop registering people for this course. Stop it. They don't have hair on their chest. What's the guy's name? The rapper from Florida.
Yeah.
Rick Ross. Not Rick Ross. It's the other guys. 3-6 Mafia. They say hair on the chest. The one guy says hair on the chest. They don't have hair on their chest to basically stand up and say, listen, stop registering people for this thing. But here's the thing, Nah Helmut.
Yeah.
What I'm displaying is data that is needed at every phase, because you can see data is being generated to make an economic decision. Now, the standing committees, the parliamentarians are not asking for such data. What they want is SNT, the driving buckies, booked into bed and breakfasts, out to be exotic there in the bush, and then do fact-finding, and then come back to Windhoek. And then, it just happened. Like, the partially nice, partially no-brainer suggestion in yesterday's about the Kavango, the Zambezi flood.
Yeah.
All it took for you and me was to open up that Google map that you had here. And then we realized the problematic area, which was, we've got people living in the bush, living in a floodplain.
Very floodplain that, when water levels are rising, they're going to be impacted. And the central government is going to have to respond.
Yeah. And it's going to be happening every year.
Yeah.
Every year. The situation is going to happen. And every year, a standing committee wants to drive from the National Council, wants to drive to Zambezi, and to go do another fact-finding, and another fact-finding, and another fact. What tediousness is this?
A fact-finding, on the people impacted. They've been impacted all the time.
You go talk to Abigail and to Franz, to Dana, and you ask them, how many times does that area of Lisikeli flood? Franz would tell you, every year, Dwight. So, you ask yourself the question of, okay, so now that you've gathered this information, what are you doing as a parliamentarian, as a National Council member? What are we going to do with this information? Because the Prime Minister doesn't sit in National Council sessions. Prime Minister sits in National Assembly. But then, these guys went and did a fact-finding, collected information. The Office of the Prime Minister, with the Prime Minister, knows about everything already before these MPs from the National Council responded, because it was the office of the PM that responded to the disaster. It was the office of the Prime Minister that dispensed financing for the response. It was the office of the Prime Minister that got the relief or the aid to supply to the impacted residents in Zambezi region. It was the office of the Prime Minister that carries most of the burden of dispatching the response teams. It's the office of the Prime Minister that did coordination. It's not a National Council member.
I think this is where the implementation part now comes in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why all these reports have, you know, recommendations.
Yeah.
And this is something that I got from the National Assembly's National Assembly Standing Committee on Economics and Public Administration. Now, this is the 2025 Standing Committee report on the motion titled "In View of Helping Informal Traders," that the National Assembly discussed social protection for informal traders.
Yeah.
Now, this was also based on the International Labour Organization discussion that took place that we participated in back in 2015. Now, under implementations, in that report, under implementation, that's when it pointed out, that's where they actually explained how these recommendations are adopted coming out of the, you know, standing committees. And it says, in accordance with the committee rule of the National Assembly, when the Assembly accepts with or without amendments, when the Assembly accepts with or without without amendments any recommendation of a standing committee on any subject, and the recommendation requires requires the ministry, agency, or government entity to perform or to refrain from performing the action, the office ministry, agency, or government entity must comply with the recommendations of the committee adopted by the Assembly within a period of 3 months. Mm. So they have about a period of 3 months to, in a very long way of saying, adopt everything that's been recommended to the ministry, like we saw with yesterday's report. There were a lot of recommendations directed to the Ministry of Urban and Rural Development, Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education, and all other interested stakeholders.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. They have a period of 3 months to adopt the recommendation either or everything that's been recommended, or they can just tweak it to suit you know, the situation on the ground.
Yeah.
Now, so the fact-finding mission guys, aka your National Assembly, National Council, Standing Committees, are just compiling this information, putting it together, and then recommending to the respective ministries, whether be it the Ministry of Agriculture, if it's an agriculture related fact-finding mission, or Ministry of Mines or Ministry of Environment, if it's a mining or environment or tourism related type of fact-finding mission.
Yeah.
So they're just gathering this information and then providing recommendation to offices, ministries, or agencies. Now, here's one. There are two examples that we can use here. One is one that is based on yesterday's discussion on the based in the flooding in the Zambezi region.
Yeah.
And the solution. This is a very interesting one. On the conundrum that we found out that the Namibian government basically in general has to face with regards to addressing the flooding issues, especially in the Zambezi region, is just how flat the plain is. In other words, every time water levels in the Zambezi region are going to rise, 90 to 100% of the time people are going to get flooded.
Yeah.
And the central government, especially the office of the prime minister, will have to respond. That's why, the standing committee pointed out in their conclusion that we need a long-term solution.
Mm.
And when you look at just how big the area that is flood prone is, you just can't help but wonder, what is the long-term solution?
Mm.
They did talk about, relocating a lot of people to highlands, but like I pointed out earlier, I know a few places in the Kavango region, especially in the Kavango East region, where when the water levels of the Kavango region rises,
yeah,
even schools get flooded. Now, what that means is you have public infrastructures that is needed, that is built in low plain areas.
Yep.
So, in other words, we should have built these facilities in on elevated areas where we wanted, where we want people to move.
Yep.
Because even if we relocate them, we'll have to build all the infrastructure. I think your clinics and all over again. That shows just how terrible you are at planning.
I'm glad you.
You know, I'm so glad I'm not in parliament. So big, because I can just do all the cooking. Because if I was there, because then I would be all politically correct to, you know, say these things are challenging. No, they are not. The Zambezi River is always, the water levels are always going to change. And yeah, when they rise, people are gonna flood.
Yeah, and the geography will always work against you. I mean, it's not even rocket science. That's how straightforward the particular discussion is. And it's these particular concerns now, Helmut.
Yeah.
Climate change is going to be what do they call that thing? It's going to be unpredictable picture going ahead in future, even from next year onwards.
Yeah.
Because you might have scenarios where it'll be dry 1 year, flash flood next year. Dry 1 year, flash flood next year.
You're basically dealing with two extremes.
Yeah. And it'll keep constantly rotating like this. And the downside is you can basically see we will have to think more about crisis management, disaster risk management in advance. Before we continue, I've got an ad break to take.
Yeah.
Need some help with the groceries this month? Then YouSave has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 YouSave voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 YouSave voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. YouSave, where good food costs less.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Nenge fata fana na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. We are 13 minutes. We have 13 minutes left to the hour of 7. And if you just tuned in, you have tuned in towards the end of today's home run. That's on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. And that's with your favorite duo here in the studio. That's Helmut and Dwight. So our parliamentarians, and not parliamentarians, speakers, you know, the speakers in the African continent, as long as you know, a member of the Commonwealth. I mean, I still have a problem with the term Commonwealth, because they keep saying the wealth is common, because maybe that's because I'm just translating it a little too literal. And the Commonwealth, last time I checked, I'm broke, so definitely the wealth is not as common as the word common entails. But, well, I don't see a lot of things that was basically covered at this event that is not, you know, that is not part of one or two or even just several conversations that are already taking place on the African Union level, whether it's, you know, the involvement of the youth in everything governance and, creating more economic opportunities for the youth so that they are actually productive in their high energy level, like, you know, age range. And also sort of that also helps, you know, basically build, you know, build the continent more like lead us economic wise to our industrialized goal that we'd like to reach as a continent, even though, you know, some parts of the continent are still up in flames, thanks to just a couple of kabooms here and there. But, here's the thing. Yeah, there a lot of kabooms still happening on the African continent. Now, my point is, the transformation, more like just the changing up things on a legislative level. Yeah. That's one thing that was covered. That conversation is already taking place on the African Union level. And getting the youth involved in leadership, aka legislative, you know, in legislations or legislative practices. Mm. That conversation, if, you know, fits into the mandate of the African Union, if you ask me. And the use of technology in not just governance but development, you know, continental development overall. Still, you can talk about that in African Union. So you don't have to create a whole, more like to attend that event under a whole different banner. Mm. Yeah, that has colonial roots. Yeah, I know.
I mean, maybe I should open up a master class, Almut, about describing to people about if you really want to develop your own industries and stuff, you've really got to develop the groundwork.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate discussion is that in a Namibian context, I mean, you sometimes even see it in the conversations that people are having in a broader scenario about understanding certain particular bilateral or multilateral platforms that they don't see specifically what role they've got to play here in the immediate. Let me take this thing out. In the immediate sort of like vicinity of Namibia's economy.
Yeah.
Fun thing is, for example, I don't support Netflix. I refuse, even if the thing is pre-installed on my phone.
Yeah.
I will not send $100 in a dev. But the unfortunate thing is,
yeah,
I do support Google because I do send $40 to, you know, for to buy extra storage space, you know, on a server, basically, for the various particular Google products that I use. Because I see the functionality. I don't see the functionality in having a Netflix account. Now, the reason why I'm showing two particular scenarios is because we are training IT staff,
yeah,
every year,
yeah,
at universities. We're training IT graduates every year, but none of them decided to make a Gmail equivalent. None of them decided to make what's the thing's name, Tochman? The program platform.
Instagram?
No.
What's that?
Not an application, not a social media. What a social media does, Helmut, yeah, a social media cuts away a piece of the internet. Think of it like communal land disputes. One guy shows up there and decides to camp off a piece of land. He's not supposed to camp off a piece of land.
See?
He's not supposed to put up a fence. But that's basically what Meta has done.
Yeah.
Now, we see a whole bunch of Namibian graduates who don't, you know, Helmut, we could have solved our own particular sort of like mismatches of economic development a long time ago. If a long time ago, the Namibian government was also proactive in saying, hey, listen, these new economic developments happening. We need to be abreast of these things. We need to participate in them. No. Why? Because for 10 plus years, we have not solved data protection and cybersecurity. In many cases, even the most basic of misunderstandings, meaning the disconnect in understanding how real world issues can impact a Namibian in Namibia.
Yeah.
Look at COVID. Late responses. And then what happened? Just because the truck driver wanted to go visit his girlfriend in Walvis, poof, there we go. And just because all the Namibians thought, okay, if Windhoek gets locked down, let me run to Walvis and Swakop. But you're taking the thing with you to Walvis and Swakop.
Yeah.
Poof, those guys get locked down. And then there was some sort of beef happening between Windhoekers and Irongo, you know, residents, because the Windhoekers were dumb. And then you heard the Windhoekers ran to the north, some of them. Some of them ran to the south, some of them. So we can clearly see how, in the broader scheme of things, people really don't understand how their actions have contributes profoundly towards real world problems, or creates real world problems. And specifically, that you can immediately also identify that MPs at a National Council, National Assembly level, who believe they could do something, who believe they want to contribute something because they got voted into those positions in the first place, which is a noble position to occupy. And then they go and participate in such multilateral international platforms, even on an African level. And then you can immediately see, but you guys are not the implementers. You're not the implementer. You can't even block a ministry's budget at before the budget gets tabled even. You know, I really want to explore that dimension, Hamid. I don't know if it exists. Whether or not an opposition party can, an MP can ask from an opposition party side of the National Assembly or National Council for a ministry to disclose what their plans are for the new financial year before they submit, or before the Minister of Finance presents at the designated date the new budget of for financial year. I wonder if that exists. I don't think it exists.
Like a way of a ministry of a way that a ministry can show, you know, has to present the idea of what they plan on procuring the following year.
Yeah.
No, they already do that.
No, but before it gets tabled at by the minister.
Yeah, I mean, look, okay, last time I checked, all the ministries and SOEs and basically agencies, including your executive offices, are required to submit their procurement plans before the end of the year.
Mm. No, that's procurement plans.
Yeah.
That's a segment of the budget.
Yeah, that's okay, so you want like the entire,
they
including their operations.
Yeah, before.
Oh, that would be fun.
Exactly, that's why I'm spitballing this idea. Is there a way that these opposition party people, who are now throwing their toys out about the speaker, why don't they act that way in asking a proactive question, or be proactive, because that's just what this thing is saying.
They've got these are my expenses for this.
Please show what you wish to plan in the next financial year. You know, you literally work in advance, because what did you and I prove? When it comes to the October mid-year budget review, November is basically the last working month for the government. The whole of December,
you don't have time.
In the whole of December, you can basically discount that no government office will probably achieve any particular goals, because 50% of them will go on leave on holiday.
Yeah.
It'll either be to the north, or it'll either be to Swakop.
Yeah.
Or it'll either be to their farms, if some of them own farms still. And then January, half of them would still be on leave. February, they would have to submit documents, and in the middle of February already, the Minister of Finance wants to submit a new, was to table a new budget.
Yeah.
So, because in March, they are just rounding out the last remnants of the previous budget, and 1st of April starts the new financial year.
That's it.
5 months. No, 4 months of wasting time. 4 months. Four. I'm showing you guys this. Albert is making me famous. I'm showing you. 4 months.
Yeah. Look, I read this whole Commonwealth, discussion of, speakers and presiding officers. I read that report with confidence, because I didn't focus much on the umbrella that everything was done under, and that is the Commonwealth, Commonwealth umbrella. Until you pointed it out, now the whole report is just a wall, just ruined. Because now I'm sitting here thinking, there's nothing that these guys discussed here that they could not have discussed at the African Union.
Mm.
Absolutely nothing. Technology, governance, world, youth, everything. Actually, that, it's either there or the Pan-African Parliament, but then they spend 90% of the time trying to murder each other.
Mm.
Yeah. Or on a sadic level. And these things are already, it's the sheer redundancy of it all for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I won't call it redundancy yet, Hamut, because there's a reason why I started there with the name.
Mm.
Because I was like, why are we part of some of these things?
Yeah.
Look, I can understand the IPU. I can understand the Pan-African Parliament. I can understand the what other thing is there? What's the other one that they go to? For the IPU, they go to Geneva, but there's another one of the IPU that they go to Singiki for, to Washington, D.C. for. I can understand those engagements, Helmut. I don't understand attending as Namibia Commonwealth engagements. I don't understand.
Yeah, me neither. Well, for one, the wealth is not as common as the word common entails. So
I really don't.
Throw in the colonial history and I'm going, okay, you know what? We could have done better.
So
7 o'clock on the dot. That brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM, with your favorite duo here on Eagle FM. That's Helmut and Dwight here on Home Run. We call it a day and leave you in the company of the next program. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned, guys. See you tomorrow.